Buddy, welcome to the June 28th general meeting of the Cambria Community Services District. If everybody can please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do have a quorum. Director Childcott still out of state. Is there any report from a closed session, Mr. Montandon?
There's no reportable items that were discussed in the last regular meeting of this board, and that ends my report.
Are there any additions, deletions, or pulled consent items?
I have a couple. Item that falls under Roman numeral 5B2, it's the Slo County Action for Healthy Communities presentation we have here today, Lillian Judd. We ask that that be moved up under presentations as the second item. So after your proclamation recognizing the retirement of Linda DeClercq, please, and before the presentation on the CCSD potential water loss detection program. And then we need to pull for separate consideration under the consent agenda, Roman numeral 6, the letter L, which is casting a ballot for the LAFCO special district member, because we've got to actually make a recommendation on who you should vote for. And then finally, right there at the same consent agenda, item M, as in mom, the resolution number in that item for the SEIU should be 53.
I'm good, Elon. Good to see you.
I would like to honor Linda DeClercq, who is Dennis's wife. Linda unfortunately cannot be here today. And we have prepared a proclamation for Linda DeClercq, and I'd like to read it and then present the framed copy for Linda and her wonderful performance and service to the community. Whereas Linda DeClercq was first employed by the Cambria Community Services District 1975 through 1979 as account clerk, and then promoted to secretary to the board and general manager, resigning to raise her family in July 1979 and returning March 13, 2002 as clerical assistant, transferring to Cambria Fire Department May 13, 2003, and reclassified to Admin Tech 2 July 1, 2004, and retiring June 27, 2007, and whereas as a competent, dedicated, and motivated CCSD employee, the heart of the Cambria Fire Department, Linda works tirelessly and efficiently to organize, develop, and implement new documents and forms, record keeping, filing procedures, and establish protocols and policies to improve proficiency and effectiveness. And whereas Linda completed and reorganized several existing programs, including the fire plan review, fire suppression assessment, and fire sprinkler programs, tracking records management. And whereas she also developed new forms, procedures, and improved the information dissemination and notification for Cambria Community Emergency Response Team, also known as CERT, of which she is a very active member and is the primary organizer of the initial CERT training classes. And whereas she always performed these and many more tasks while maintaining a positive, humorous, patient, empathetic demeanor, and always strives to provide excellent customer service, and whereas Linda is an extremely talented photographer and routinely shares her valued talents and personal equipment to create and develop documents that require photo imaging that have proven invaluable for CCSD, fire department training, Coast Union High School, the Cambrian, and the Tribune, and now therefore by virtue of the authority vested in me as president of the Board of the Neighbors of Ours, they've raised our children, they lived right around the corner from our home, and we're proud to have you as neighbors.
Thank you very much. If I could, if the board would indulge me, I would like to read a statement from Linda. I would like to thank the CCSD. For the opportunity to work for the district and the community. It has been very rewarding to return to the district after 20 plus year absence and to work with some of the same staff from 1979 and get acquainted with some of the current wonderful staff and board members. I have considered it a privilege to work and live in this community, especially cherish the friendships and professional opportunities extended to me by the Cambria Fire Department. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Is Ms. Judd here? Would you like to approach the dais? I'd appreciate it. And I understand you, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to the Economic Opportunity Commission Planning. Are you the director?
Yes, director.
Ms. Lillian Judd, and she would like to make a presentation in regards to healthy communities. So you have the floor.
Thank you. Let me get organized. Good sound? Okay, good. Hello. Thank you so much for welcoming me to your CSD meeting. My name is Lillian Judd. I'm Director of Planning and Program Development for the Economic Opportunity Commission of San Luis Obispo County, which is our county's community action agency. Actually, I'm here today, though, representing the Action for Healthy Communities Collaboration, which is about an eight-year collaboration formed to collaboratively develop how smart she is. She's been a real asset to our board, as I know she is to yours. And thank you so much. She's our first CSD representative to our board, which, of course, is a tripartite board. One-third low-income representatives, one-third private sector, and one-third elected officials, so that we have a nice mix to bring to the table for sharing information and making tough decisions. Basically, I brought each of you this report. This is called the Indicator Report. It is really just a snapshot of some of the highlights of information that's in the 318-page comprehensive report. And that comprehensive report is on a disc in a pocket, and I encourage you to print it out, put it in a binder where you can use it as a master for making copies. It's just rich with information, and we're hoping that it'll be a good resource to your board. So I'm not going to walk through the indicator book. I've got a brief PowerPoint, and I'm not even going to hit all the slides. The PowerPoint and the indicator book are not in sync, so you can't follow along with the indicator book this afternoon. And I'm going to skip through and just touch on some of the highlights. Okay, introduction. First of all, there are two reports that we produced as part of Action for Healthy Communities. We produced this indicator report I've just shown you, and again, that's just highlights, and then the comprehensive 318-page report. Each of them is divided into seven sections that cover some of the major issues in any community: basic needs, economic, education, health, public safety, social environment, and natural environment. We've done the report four times now, 1999, 2001, 2003, and 2006. And this allows us to identify and track trends right here in our county. The methodology is that the report contains just a ton of secondary data, and the findings from both a telephone survey and a face-to-face survey. The telephone survey was more than 500 completed telephone calls. They were randomly selected, and 504 is a statistically significant number, and that allows us to use the telephone survey findings to generalize to the adult population countywide. The face-to-face survey was a little different. We delayed, including the homebound seniors, so that we wanted to go out and ask them. But because we targeted them, through the agencies that serve them and have built trust and rapport with them, we can't extrapolate that information to the general population. The methodology doesn't lend itself to that. Remember, though, that the face-to-face surveys, as we look at some of the data, these are some of the lowest income populations in the county. They either have no income, like the homeless, they have fixed incomes like Social Security disability, or they have very low wage income, as many of the Spanish speakers who work in agriculture or the hospitality industry do. Each one of the seven categories has a goal. So the goal of basic needs is that all persons will have the basic necessities of life, including food and decent, safe, and affordable housing. The good thing about these goals is, for the most part, they're all very simple and they're all very doable. When you look at the basic needs, the telephone survey shows that in 2006, the number is going up. The number of people who say that in any given month they are going without basic needs like food, clothing, childcare, housing, health care. The number went from 8 to 9 to 8 to 13% in the telephone population. The face-to-face survey is a little more disturbing, and again, because they're such low-income people, you'll see that 52% of the people in 2006 said they were not meeting their basic needs in any given month. School meals program. Well, you can tell the percent of school children enrolled in the school meal program is staying pretty steady across the years. But what is noteworthy about this is that it's consistently lower enrollment than across the state. So what is the data telling us? Is it telling us that we don't have the need in this county, or is it telling us that we're not doing a good job enrolling the people who are eligible and need that program? And if that's the issue, then why aren't we doing a good job enrolling people, and what can we do about it? Homeless shelter capacity. We have two homeless shelters, two permanent shelters in San Luis Obispo County, the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter in San Luis Obispo, which EOC has operated since 1989, and the ECHO church-based permanent shelter in Atascadero, which a faith-based. One of the problems here is that the number of people who are turned away from the shelter, where demand for services exceeds the bed capacity, is going up steadily. And in lots of ways, it's kind of leveling off, because the people who have been homeless for a while in our community know that the highest priority for the beds are women and children and the medically fragile, so they're not even coming for a bed at night. They know that there aren't enough beds. And these are the turnaways just for where the demand exceeded the capacity. It has nothing to do with the people who were turned away because they weren't appropriate, whether they were under the influence or misbehaving or whatever, that they were not appropriate for congregate living. What did I do, Carlos? Is that me? I'm kind of hung up. How do I get off the menu? Thank you. Thanks. Great to have technical support. Affordable housing. This is no surprise to anyone. The number of homes being sold or rented to low-income people in the county has been falling. And that reflects two things: the cost of housing, the cost of rental housing or purchasing, and it's also a decline in the production of affordable units of housing across the county. We seem to be building McMansions where we are building in the county. Housing costs. Okay, I'm doing it. Carlos, can you hit that and get rid of that menu for me again? I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I'll try not to. HUD, Housing and Urban Development, says that a family should not be paying more than a third of its income for housing. And so when we look at housing costs. Okay, housing costs. We should not be paying more than a third of our income for housing. So when you look at the face-to-face survey, you'll see that 43% of the people are paying more than half their income for housing, Remember, these are the lowest income people we talk to, probably. And in the telephone survey, about an equal amount, 41%, said that they were spending less than a third of their income for housing. So that's a major disparity, how it flips that way. Median home price, staggering. Cost of a house, I'm sorry, the median home price in the county rose 341%, from $177,900 to $607,100. And then in the same 10-year period, while it rose, while the per capita income rose, median income rose 27% in between 2002 and 2006. In the 10-year period, it only rose 22%. So you can see that people's incomes are not keeping up with the cost of housing. Economics. The community goal is that all persons will have employment opportunities and support services that enable them to achieve their highest individual level of self-sufficiency. I assume everyone knows the two most critical supports that low-income people need in order to be fully employed are transportation and child care, and they are two of the shakiest infrastructures in our county right now. The good news from the SLO Council of Governments is that they're going to be doing an expansion and extension of a lot of the fixed routes beginning in August, and that's wonderful news. But we are really under capacity for our child care slots, especially child care slots for low-income families who need subsidies, for people who work weekends and evenings, especially in the hospitality industry, or people who serve special needs children. Economic well-being. If you look at the economic well-being, and these are people who said, who answered the question, are you better off economically this year? Between 1999 and 2001, the number of people saying, no, I'm not better off, doubled, more than doubled, from 14 to 29%. And then between 2001 and 2003, it kept climbing from 29% to 35%. Then it dropped a little from the 35% down to 23%. But that is still a lot higher than it was at 14%. So people are beginning to feel the pinch. And I actually have been out interviewing people in the last month, and to a person, gas prices were pinching everyone regardless of their income level. Per capita personal income did not grow very much recently. And just want to point out that San Luis Obispo County is slight work they're doing. They're just trying to pick up a second income, but they are not working at their skill level or capacity or earning capacity. Education, the community goal is that all students enter school ready to learn, and they graduate from high school prepared for the workforce or for higher education, and that they also have an interest in lifelong learning. You know, in the interest of time, and because I am no good at it, in interpreting test results, I'm going to skip through a couple of the test results and the college prep scores, and I'm going to focus in this section on high school dropouts. We can see that the four-year high school dropout rates in the county have kind of fluctuated from a low of 3.8 in 2001-02 to a high of 10.5 in 2004-05. But that four-year dropout rate is still below the California rate. What is not showing here, but when you dig down into the data, the dropouts of Hispanics and African Americans are increasing all across the county. And I have to take a step aside and get on my personal soapbox. The elephant in the room across our county is that we are a bilingual society. And we need to cultivate a bilingual workforce and citizenry. So we need to appreciate and value. I mean, we do talk about valuing diversity and valuing multiculturalism, but our high school rates are not showing that these kids are feeling that they have a future, that they are valued, that they have a role to play in a bicultural society. So I think that's kind of a message, and thank you for allowing me to be on my soapbox. Youth activities, back up to that one. It looks like across all the years that, for the most part, the majority of youth say that they have plenty of after-school and weekend activities. I'm going to get on another quick soapbox and say, back in the old days when I didn't have gray hair, we actually used to consider bike riding and playing marbles as having enough activities. And look at the picture. That's a child running through the sprinkler. I think, though, when I go to community meetings and I hear youth talk about youth activities, a lot of times they're talking about a skateboard park. So it's not just my soapbox on reminding our kids to count their blessings and get out and skip rope and ride their bikes and that kind of thing. It's also a reminder that to do the common sense check when we're... Could I have reversed the direction I'm going, Carlos? Okay, here we go. Health. The goal for health is that all persons practice healthy behaviors and have access to and use preventive and primary health care services that enable them to maximize their physical and mental well-being. I'm going to try and move quickly through this. Health insurance coverage. 88% of our telephone survey respondents had health insurance in 2006, and that's been relatively consistent. But only 40% of the face-to-face survey respondents had health insurance. And remember, they are homeless, people who have not connected to services that they're entitled to. They're undocumented Latinos who are not eligible for a full range of health services. Besides which, having health insurance does not mean you have access to care. We have a physician shortage in the county, and we have people who don't accept different forms of insurance. So remember that insurance coverage is just one issue of the public health issue. Eligibility for services has to do with your income and your coverage. Availability of services has to do with community infrastructure. Affordability of services has to do with your insurance coverage and the insurance costs. And the sad news is the people who have no insurance for one reason or another are the only ones who pay retail for their health services. Exercise. I'm just going to briefly say that the number of people exercising for 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, has declined from 57% in 2003 to 36% in 2006, even with all this amazing, beautiful region we live in with hiking and biking and beaches and trails. We are exercising less. Obesity. Our county is about the same as the state in terms of our obesity levels, but don't we imagine there's a relationship between declining exercise and obesity? And when you look at the percentage of county students who are overweight, again, it's that subjective data, and in grade 7, we have a higher level of obesity recently. But then it kind of tapers off in grade 9 and grade 11, and maybe that's a good sign that they're more independent and they're getting more exercise and they're out in the broader world. But I wonder sometimes if it means that there's more exercise or more anorexia. So again, that's subjective data, and how do you read it and what's it telling us? Adult smoking. This county's done a great job to reduce adult smokers, steadily decreasing since 2001. Youth smoking is going up a little bit, and though those numbers aren't large, we know that when it jumps from 6%, we see 6% of our 11th graders are smoking every day, in the past 30 days, and only 3% of Californians are. So we've got a problem. We're doing worse than California. It's twice the state rate. And then teen alcohol abuse. 41% of 11th graders had at least one drink in the past 30 days, which is slightly down from 2003-2004. But I would say that's alarming. I mean, first of all, they're not legal age. And even if it's a beer or something, it's drinking. And why are they drinking instead of doing something else? Natural environment. The community goal is that we maintain and enhance the health and beauty of the natural environment by living within our natural resources, and human abilities, and that we plan and manage our development. I'm going to skip through the parks and the traffic and just go to the growth patterns. You can see that the two areas of the county where we do not have a significant change in the number of new dwellings are the North Coast and San Luis Obispo. I live in Los Osos, so I understand the issues of Los Osos and Cambria, the two of the North Coast, and our issues are moratorium on building because of our water resources and things. San Luis Obispo has a slightly different issue. It's kind of a density issue, but kind of a political environment issue, too. Public safety. The goal is that all persons feel and are safe in their homes, schools, workplace, and communities. And the crime rates, we have relatively low crime rates for the state. But adult safety perceptions, though we have the low crime rates, the perception of feeling safe in the neighborhood is decreasing. To what do we attribute that? We actually saw some spikes during the Rex Krebs years, if you remember him. And there were a spike in feeling of insecurity. But we don't know exactly what that's attributed to. Student safety perceptions. Most students either feel very safe or safe at school, although those two in combination only represent 63% of the kids. And I'm wondering if this has some relationship to the growth of gangs in school, because the kids are going to be more impacted with gang activity on a school campus than parents are just out and about in the community. And I've talked to a lot of kids who are incarcerated at the California Youth Authority, and a lot of them said they'd never been in the classroom where they felt safe. They always sat in the seat that was in the corner, so their back was to the wall and no one could sneak up behind them. So kids have lots of safety issues in school that we're just beginning to understand. Social environment, I'm really going to skip through these real quickly. Community goal is that all persons have the opportunities to engage in the civic, recreational, and cultural aspects of their communities. And voter participation, all I'm going to say is, I believe that's always relevant to the election issues and the candidates at any given time. Volunteer participation, we've had a very, very high level of volunteerism in the county. And for the most part, the seniors are the backbone of the volunteer corps. But I know there are a lot of seniors who are going back to work to make ends meet. I've been hearing that recently. They're living longer. They're probably caring for someone, either a grandchild that they didn't expect to care for, or even an aging parent. But seniors are getting busy and are less likely to be volunteering, and we're going to see some social service impacts when we don't have their people power. Discrimination. When you compare the face-to-face surveys and the telephone surveys, the differences are huge. Sometimes you will find twice as many Latinos or homeless people who are concerned about crime, violent crime, gang activity, and racism than you do with the general telephone population. So again, we're talking about people who are discriminated against for many reasons and live in rougher neighborhoods than the general population. Conclusion. We live in a gorgeous place, sometimes because we do so much of our work is around low-income communities. I say it's a beautiful place to be poor. What I hope you'll remember in the work that you do is the 318-page comprehensive report will be a wonderful resource for you. Again, if you print it out and look through it, even if you just look through the table of contents and get a sense of how much data is really there, there's just a ton of information. Please also remember that EOC, your community action agency, should be a resource to you. If there's something we can help you with, wrestle with an issue, dig down and find some data, understand what's going on, we're here to help as well. And I wanted to say thank you to you, the members of the CSD, for all you do. Again, living in Los Osos, I know the burden of serving as a CSD member. So we appreciate you, and I also want to thank Carlos for his technical assistance and Kathy for her technical assistance. So thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you. And if we can help, let us know.
Thank you very much.
Mr. President, could I just return the compliment to Lillian? You can imagine what a pleasure it is for me to work with a group like her and all the rest of the staff. And every day is a challenge, and it's unbelievable the breadth of activities that ELC is involved in. Thank you, Lillian. Bye.
Now it's we're up to agenda item 3B, and I believe this is Jim Adams, who will be making a presentation on potential water loss detection program and water conservation program. Is that right?
Yes, Mr. President, directors. Jim Adams, Water Department Supervisor, and Corey Ryan, Conservation Specialist. I'll go ahead and read our staff report real quickly here. The discussion in general is the CCSD installed the automated meter reading system in the spring of 04 and completed the project in the summer of 06. All the water meters in the community have been replaced and are operating and meeting staff's expectations. The new technology provides for greater accuracy, fewer rereads, and improved customer service with the options like the potential leak or water loss detection system. Features staff can better assist the residents of Cambria with. Also, we'd like to present the CCSD water conservation program that Corey will touch base on. With very little rainfall this season, we all need to make an extra effort to conserve water, understand conservation guidelines, and implement water-saving ideas, tips, such as taking advantage of the recycled water the CCSD provides for the homeowners that live within the community. And Carlos has a slideshow up already, so we'll move on to the presentation of the potential water loss detection system. Why don't I just do this? First off, getting to know the system, we just introduced the AMR, like I stated, a few years ago, and we're just now coming to terms with operations and the administration and programming on how we're going to implement this to better serve the customers. The CCSD, we continue to develop the leak detection program, and now we've come of age to where we found we have a pretty good approach to how we're going to manage this program. It's an important water loss tool in the sense of being able to control the water loss sooner, so the potential for the customer's higher bills and production in the drier months, it doesn't impact us as much. And there again, it better serves the community. I'm looking for my notes here. Hold on one sec. Do you want to interject anything on that?
Yeah, we started out this program through our billing department, mostly targeting people with higher usage so that it was pretty obvious that they had some type of water loss. We've since moved on to working with it as a conservation tool, and it's been very helpful for us. Some people don't have real high usage, but they're still losing water in a manner that they may not even be aware of, and so that's the direction that we're trying to take the program.
Next, I'm going to touch base on the system and how it works real quick before we get into the Carlos. Automated meter reading. Touch base real quick on how it works in the sense that the automation. The meter works through water flowing through it. It's the basic principle. And the dial turns. Well, now with the new transmitters, the dial has a solid-state device that sends a signal to the transmitter. And it's accurate down to a tenth of a cubic foot. Each transmitter has an ID number which associates itself with the address or that certain parcel so the administration or billing department can identify it. That keeps everything separate, so it's not like a bunch of radios out there and everything's getting confused. It has its own identification. Along with that, it has the leak detection portion of it. Let me regress a little bit. The transmitter sends a signal out, and we drive around, as you can see in the picture on this slide, with the computer, and it has a receiver, and all we do is drive down the street, and it communicates with those meters. And then we download that onto a disk and submit it to billing, and then they process from there. Moving on to the leak detection portion of it, which we're trying to focus on, or water loss portion, it's a part of the system, it's a feature on the system that helps us identify if there's been any water going through the meter for a period of 24 hours, the current 24 hours. If it's got water's gone through the meter every 24 hours consecutively, then it throws up a red flag and the computer, our receiver, picks it up. If it, what it's looking for is 1 hour of sleep on that meter, 1 hour of no movement in that 24-hour period of time, then it won't throw up the red flag. It's pretty unusual for that to happen. You know, even if your appliances are malfunctioning, which is one of the causes we'll get into later. How to read your meter. I'm going to go over this and touch base with this real quick again. That's the normal meter dial. There's a display in the back. You can look at that's a normal setting with the transmitter and the meter sitting on the back table. Everybody in the community has this type of dial. There's only a few exceptions out there commercially that we haven't changed over yet. The dial reads in cubic feet. Okay, number one is pointing to the unit field. That is your billing units. Those are what you receive on your bill. So if you look at your meter, it's the white field that you're being billed for. The two black fields on the right are cubic feet, and it takes 100 of those. That'll go around, and it'll turn 99, and then when it goes to 100, those turn to zeros, and you'll have the white field turn over to 1. Or to the next number in sequence. That's your billing unit. Number two, the red hand, is the rotating dial that goes around one rotation of the indicator hand is 1 cubic foot, which will relate to the black field turning over 1. Each number around the dial is a tenth of a cubic foot. And each hash mark in between those numbers or 1/100 of a cubic foot. So you can monitor your water personally very, very low. You can go down to 1/100 of a cubic foot to identify how much water is going through your meter at night, when you're gone on vacation, or whatever the case may be. Three is the wheel, the blue wheel, is the leak detector. If there's any amount of water going through your meter, that's going to turn. Now, you may have to stare at it for a little while. A small leak, it's going to take longer for it to register. But if you keep an eye on it or make a little mark on it, on the glass, you can see that that wheel will turn with very minute amount of water. They're very accurate. The leak detector. Now, what do I want to do here? What is the leak detector? The leak detector is that wheel that I just referred to. That's the manual way to look at it. I did go back. That's the manual way to look at it. When we're driving by in the field, we're just waiting for the device on the meter to let us know that it's a tamper. How does it work? Losing my spot here. The leak detector is, I just explained, it goes through the whole process of any water going through the meter. The next thing is how are the meters read? Or when are the meters read? Meters are read every month. Every other month is a billing month. January, February, that's a billing month. Every 2 months throughout the year is a billing cycle. Now with the leak detection or water loss program, we're doing it bi-monthly in between the billing cycles so we can detect the water usage and avoid high bills sooner. And that benefits the customers in the long run and saves staff time overall. what is being detected. I'm going to go ahead and let Corey go through this. Before I do, on leaks, I wanted to stress, and the utility manager wanted me to is that right?
No, that was right.
Okay. I wanted to stress about leak detection. Everybody's responsible for their personal plumbing on their side of the meter, and the district, we will send out operators. Administration will correlate with you as much as we can to help you resolve your problems. We'd be more than glad to come out. And in this trying time, with our well levels dropping, with the minimal rainfall this year, there's some real issues that we all really need to take part in and really focus on this. And we can use your help, the customer's help. And if you see water anywhere in the community, it's been a spring for 15 years, don't assume it this year. Let us go out and analyze it and see what the problem is before it can get worse or we get in dire straits for more water. And leaks in the street, springs, and when you're going on your hikes in the canyons around the community, on the roads and everything, and you observe water flowing, well, it's going to be sort of unusual this time of year, especially after the minimal rainfall. We'd like to be notified of it because we have a lot of lines that cross bridges, go down through ravines in the green space corridors, and we'd like to investigate it, and they're hard to find sometimes. So if you see water flowing down a ditch or something, please notify the department or the administration office.
And while they're switching speakers, and that's within any 24-hour period, because we do have emergency response, and we have some fine and talented water operators and wastewater operators who work 24 hours or they're on standby. So anybody who's watching from home or is in the audience, you just dial the same number here at the CCSD, which is 927-6223. And if it's after hours, it will roll over to our 24-hour emergency response, and we will get someone out there to check that problem out.
Okay. As Jim pointed out, the leak detectors are looking for at least an hour break in usage. So any time that you don't have that break in usage, which is really low considering most people do sleep, most people do work, that is quite an unusual type of usage. Some of the things that may represent that sort of usage or cause that to appear are dripping faucets that lots of us just walk by and say, oh, I need to fix that. Oh, yep, I've known that for 3 months. Well, what you probably don't know is that when you have a dripping faucet that turns into a drop, a large size drop, you can use 393,000 gallons of water in 1 month time span. Same goes for running or leaking toilets. Some leaks in toilets are silent. You can't hear them. Usually, if you pay attention enough, you will hear your toilets run. Lots of times at night when you finally rest and you have the million things going through your head, all of a sudden you say, wow, I didn't realize I had water running. Why do I have water running? It's probably your toilet. And those kind of things could be fixed pretty easily with a flapper valve or something minute that's really not going to cost a lot of money, a lot less money than water. Then some irrigation leaks can be detected by the leak detector program. The irrigation leak, lots of people say, oh, well, I shut off my irrigation system. Well, your irrigation can still be leaking. If you turn off your timer system, you may have faulty valves on your sprinkler heads, and those can still lose water. Malfunctioning reverse osmosis systems are very, very common, and what we see most of the time since we've implemented this program. A reverse osmosis system has a flush system that filtrates the water that's not being used, because it takes about 2 to 4 gallons of water for every gallon of filtered water that's produced. 2 to 4 is flushed. And that system just goes straight into the plumbing underneath your kitchen sink. And lots of times, if you have a older filter, that valve can fail, and then you constantly run water through the system and it just flows right through your plumbing and you never know. Malfunctioning water softener systems are on the same sort of basis as the reverse osmosis system. And some ice makers, most of the big industrial size ice makers, which really makes it hard Currently, we do not include commercial property in our leak detector program for this reason, because ice makers can continually pull water. Any break in a service line is definitely going to show on a leak detector, because that's going to continually pull water through your meter. Like I mentioned before, we have really worked and worked on using this leak detector information to the best of our advantage and the customer's advantage. Currently, we are in a development stage for how to notify customers who appear on the list or the report for the first time. Right now, we started out to be pretty consistently reporting a list of about 300 customers every month. We'd have about 300 customers on the potential water loss list. We're down now to about 200 every month, and about 50 of those are first time on the list. This picture that's here is a sample of the current flyer that we're working on being the first step in notifying customers. It's just a friendly notice that tries to get people to understand that they could be saving themselves a little money, and that it may be a problem, it may not be a problem, because something, you know, somebody could have left a hose running overnight or not turned it off all the way. Any type of, faucets that you shut down instead of turn all the way, those sometimes stay running and just drip throughout the night, and that kind of thing will be detected. Because any time the transmitters hold a 24-hour worth of memory. So if we go out and read the next day after you left a faucet in that position, then you would show up on the list. So we're trying to notify customers without panicking them that they have something's going wrong. Oh my gosh, what do I do? And that's where we're at with that right now. The next time they appear on the list consecutively, we will send out a courtesy notice, and we have implemented this for the last probably about 6 months now. It just notifies them that they are reappearing on this list. We're trying to use the information, advises them that they may have a problem out there. It's more likely. And it includes a flyer that we have generated, a pamphlet about understanding residential water usage. It's really handy little cheat sheet on exactly how much some of the regularly used appliances, how much water they generate on a regular basis. The next notice that they get when they appear for a third time, and we keep a list, we have a nice binder that that notates when they were sent notices, when they've called in, what was referred to them, if the water department went out, and so we keep track of this every single month. And the third time that they appear on this list, they are now going to receive a warning of waste. And as most of you know, we have a ordinance on the prohibition of waste of water. And that includes escape of water through breaks or leaks in plumbing if it's not taken care of right away. So they're going to be warned just to help them to try and move in that direction. And they have every opportunity to come to the district, talk to us. The customer service staff at the admin office is very knowledgeable on places to start to find these kind of problems. And then they are able to also set up a water audit or survey with the water department, who will be starting to implement that process. And they'll have a worksheet of all the steps to take to help locate these problems if need be. And any additional occurrence on the list may be subject to fine per our ordinance. These are a couple of the water conservation guidelines that are outlined in our ordinance. The first being, of course, repairing leaks in your plumbing. And it's supposed to be within 8 hours of discovery of the problem. So we're really trying to increase the customer service and help people be aware of these problems before and giving them quite a bit of time to locate those problems and help out as much as possible. You're not to wash cars. We wash cars with a bucket and only rinse with a hose that has a shut-off nozzle. Restaurants are not to serve water to customers unless it's requested. There are table tents for that that we have in supply, so if restaurants need those, we haven't had any question about them for quite some time, but I haven't seen them on very many tables in the local restaurants, so we do have those available. We have a non-potable water resource. We have recycled water that, Jim, where is it located? San Simeon?
990 San Simeon Creek Road. They can contact Mr. Dawkins.
Okay, 990 San Simeon Creek Road. We have a supply of recycled water for all Cambria residents who choose to use that service. They can irrigate with it. It's a 200-gallon limitation.
Per load,
I believe. But you can contact the administrative office for more information on that. But it's really a great idea to take advantage of that free offer to use to water plants and to cut back on some of your water usage. And in that same respect, we don't allow the washing of hardscapes, sidewalks, driveways, parking lots. Use a broom to clean those, please. Now, as far as irrigation goes for your landscaping, we do encourage the non-potable water for that. However, we do not allow the water to run off onto other properties or streets. Unattended watering and irrigation of landscaping is not encouraged. The set it on a timer and go is really not encouraged. We feel that there are a lot of vacation homes in which that happens a lot, and that's why we don't really show that much of a grace period or anything for people who have malfunctioning irrigation systems for that reason. And we do not permit the irrigation between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. because those are the hotter parts of the days. Not that we have extremely hot days here, but water evaporates during the heat of the day and is not really doing its purpose of irrigating as effectively as it would during the lower temperatures. And always remember that irrigation should only provide enough water to maintain minimal landscaping. Some of our water savings tips is to limit showers to 5 minutes and to use those shut-off valves on your shower heads that are required by our retrofit upon resale. Install water-efficient fixtures. And we are pretty well retrofitted in Cambria at just about 95%. And so most everybody, every residential home in Cambria has at least a 1.6 gallon per flush toilet. Run only full loads of washing in the washing machine or the dishwasher. That cuts back considerably. And don't leave water running while you're shaving or brushing your teeth. That uses a lot of water. On here, we suggest that you use drought-tolerant plants that we do have. We do have a list on our website. Replacing lawns with ground covers or rocks, gravel, anything of that nature, something that won't require such high water usage. Lawn and turf grass uses more water than anything. That's the biggest water user. and periodically check your irrigation system. Since you should technically be present when you're irrigating, this is a very important part. Cambria is known for a lot of power outages during the winter months, and at that time, irrigation timers are notorious for resetting themselves back to manufacturer settings. So if you have your irrigation set up to where you have three valves, one irrigating your rose garden and one your expansive turf lawn and the others your fruit trees, then those will all reset and each valve will go off for about 30 minutes to water each section. So then you're irrigating for an hour and a half, just continuously running water. So make sure that you check those timers, and especially pay attention during the change in season, because you obviously won't need as much if we have more rain than we had this year. And again, really look into the non-potable water for irrigation. It's really a great benefit. And that is, we thank you for your part in trying to conserve and to help report any, like Jim said, any water loss that you might see, even if you aren't sure. Give us a call and we'll send somebody out to check it out.
I wanted to add a couple things, if I may.
Sure.
One thing that I wanted to point out, and we had an option a while back when I made this presentation a few years ago, when we were implementing this program, was a water meter monitor. And we didn't have them available at the time. We do now. We have a few of them on hand. And we, Carlos will put it up there. Once again, it's the size of a garage door opener. It's magnetic and can stick to your refrigerator. And if you were willing, I don't know our approach yet. It's up to the board on how we want to approach this. We sell them, we rent them, we, you know, sell them at cost, obviously, or rent them, or give them away. That's your choice. But it's a great conservation tool, and what it does is monitors your meter. We have a programmer. We can program the device, put in the serial numbers. You stick it on the fridge, it reads out exactly what it says on the dials that I explained before on your meter. It has a little LED. That round circle right below the rectangular one is an LED light that, if it leaked or the meter moved 24 hours consecutively, that light will come on. The meter button, you push it to get your read. It's an LED readout. The A interval, you can program that for, like, you're watering your lawn. You set it to zero, you water your lawn, you can hit it again, and it tells you exactly how much water you used, down to a cubic foot or tenth of a cubic foot. The B interval, and I have one in my home. I think Brian's tried it out. They work great. I use the B one for billing. So I can set it, once I know the meter readers have come by the last 3 days of the month or whatever, I reset that to zero, and I can track my usage for that billing cycle. It's a great tool. And we don't have a lot on hand, but we'd really like people to inquire with Corey or the administration office, and we can order them, and it'd only be a couple weeks out to get some.
How much do they cost?
I think, well, at the time that I purchased them a year ago, they were $75 a piece. And that's our cost.
Yeah, but how much for me?
Anything you want. You're the president.
$75.
You're looking to test one? Is that what you're saying? Another thing that we haven't investigated, but it's available by the Badger Company, is a data profiler, where if we have redundant high users and they can't understand why, we can take this data profiler out, set it up on their meter, and profile their property, and you'll see the highs and lows on charts and graphs to let them know when their usage is there, whether it's during the week or especially vacation homes. You know, when people aren't there or vacation rentals, they can actually track their usage. And I wanted to touch. It's great technology. It's our what we've installed is already outdated. We're going to have to move on here pretty soon. So, and buy new equipment. Just kidding. And I wanted to reiterate the fact that the well levels are dropping. And for those of us that were here in the last drought, 88, 89, 90. Brian's going to touch base more on this, but we're at the same spot that we were in 88, production-wise and well-level-wise. So just food for thought. Any questions?
Yes. I wanted to ask Corey, on the courtesy notice that you sent out, when you said the second consecutive month, is that the second chronological month or the second billing month?
Because we read monthly and we only bill bi-monthly, we are currently operating this program monthly.
Okay,
so
good.
It would be the consecutive month, chronologically.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Question, Mr. President. Jim, Corey, I don't know if either of you can answer the question. If not, maybe somebody else from the staff can. Since we completed installation of all of the new meters, have we calculated the amount of water loss that we get from our wellheads versus what we actually bill?
The utilities manager can probably address that. I don't know if we've done it recently. A portion of the program was to replace our production wellhead meters for more accuracy.
Right.
And we haven't completed that aspect of the project yet. But I believe Brian was tracking it.
Yeah, I've been keeping the data, but I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'll be glad to report
on it
next
time. Can you get it to us?
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. One of the payoffs we expected was some fall off in the amount of water loss between the wellheads and what is actually delivered, on the theory that the older meters were possibly leaking and so forth. Thank you.
And also the water savings of not having an independent meter reading company reading the meters now, since staff does it, and it doesn't take, you know, the three full complete days. It's about $36,000 that the district saved, even though we did spend almost $600,000. All of the meters are new and can be now put on a replacement program for at about 15 years. So we just wanted to make sure that the public was aware that we are using the technology that we have out there. We are attempting to do it in the most user-friendly way as possible with these courtesy notices and having staff. But at the same time, there have been some instances where we might call. That's why we all have difficulties, because it previously was referred to as a leak letter, or you may have a potential leak, and we've gotten through some customer response and feedback that, you know, maybe that's not the way to approach it, because then that has somebody, you know, calling a plumber instantly saying, I've got a leak. CCSD says I have a leak. So that's why we call it a potential water loss, and it's a learning process for us to not just automatically assume that somebody has a leak, but at the same time is to, we're not doing it to be judgmental or harsh. We're just trying to use the equipment that we have, and we're trying to do it very user-friendly so people are at least noticed and understand that we're trying to take advantage of those programs.
I wanted to follow up on what Jim talked about, the water levels and the serious condition that we're in right now. I promised the community that at every meeting I'll update them on the length of time that we've been surviving under this water emergency. We're now at 1,981 days since we've imposed the water emergency, and it's not getting any better. Thank you for your fine presentation.
Thank you.
I don't see any member of the Sheriff's Department here, unless they're undercover. Okay, apparently they are undercover. So let's move on to the General Manager's Report. Ms. Rudock?
Okay, thank you. For the Build-Out Reduction Program, we made one presentation to the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, their Board of Directors, on June 14th. And then we have one more coming up for the Coastal Commission on July 11th when they meet in San Luis Obispo. At the point now, we have 19 presentations under our belt, so to speak, so we'll have made a total of 20 of these BRP presentations throughout the community and the county and the state. The voluntary lot merger program, this is new. Thanks again to Corey. She's able to provide me with reports now. And on the lot mergers, you all approved that the CCSD will pay out of pocket for anyone who is willing in the community to merge their lots. This is an objective of the build-out reduction program. I want to make a couple of revisions to my staff report today. So this is kind of important for what's published. I published that in May. We had successfully 8 applicants that completed their voluntary lot mergers. But that next sentence I need you just to strike, which said that 16 lots were merged into 8, because what happened is there are people, the BRP is gauged on lot retirement, not building sites, okay? So I mixed the two up when I did the report. What happened as a result of those 8 applications being completed, 24 lots were reduced to 8 lots. That's a much better way for you to understand it and for me to understand it, thanks to Corey, so that she made that clear. There's been one merger that's been finalized in June, and so what that brings the total to now is 26 lots merged into 9. Now understand, some people had 2 lots, some people had 4, some had 3, some had, you know, a mixture. So the numbers are not always going to work out, and you can't just assume that the lots are what some people think is just 2 25-foot lots, okay? So right now the total is 26 lots that have been merged into 9. And these do work toward the BRP objectives. This costs the CCSD $1,248. One customer did merge his lots at his own expense. It wasn't that he came in, he was just doing it on his own, which is fine. He picked up the app and he paid for it himself. And then just giving you a recounting that the BRP account started with $30,095, and this is as a result of some property transactions, some sales of commercial EDUs, and that after these expenditures, there's a balance of $28,847. Right now, there are 5 more merger applications that are out there outstanding, and I'll have to check on that lot total. I think it's probably not accurate because that was before I made my changes. And then for anyone out in the public or watching this at home, if you have any information on the if you want any information on the voluntary merger program, please contact our staffer, Corey Ryan. Her number is 927-6225. Be aware that we will, and staff is working to finish a flyer that will be inserted in the utility bill that goes out on July 10th. You'll see the standards, and this is based on the Open Space Committee's recommendation that each person receive one so that we can educate the public about the program. So there'll be a flyer on one side, and you'll see the explanation of the program on the other, and it is an attempt to get it in the bill for July 10th that will be mailed out. For Special Project Area 2, I just tasked what's left here. We did send those notices out to the property owners in Special Project Area 2 on June 7th. We actually got that done a little earlier. Our target date was the 15th. And then our next task is the initial public hearing on the board action, which will be next month on July 26th here at the Vets Hall. There's no other questions, or if there's no other questions on the GM report, I can move to Parks and Rec.
No, I want to make a comment, okay, as to the customer who merged his lots at his own expense. I want to thank that customer. I hope staff expressed our appreciation. I mean, that's what being a good citizen is all about.
It's $156 each when you talk about the fees that we pay First American Title, the recordation costs, and the county fees.
And I wouldn't mind recognizing those people. If some people like that, some people don't, but I think that's a good thing.
Okay, I'll have Corey follow up with him. Okay, moving on to Parks and Recreation. Under the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve Ranch Management, we are contracting with a professional services provider for a herd of goats to eradicate the stream bank corridor of the Santa Rosa Creek on the east portion of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. We anticipate this occurring in the fall, and it will involve approximately 80 to 250 boar goats to remove the non-native vegetation that would be obviously more costly to remove by hand and obviously less environmentally sensitive than using mechanized equipment. We estimate that it will take approximately 2 months to accomplish. The goats are going to be herded each evening into our corral that is on that site. It helps us save money so that we don't have to pay transportation costs for the goats going home to San Luis Obispo each and every night. The funds are budgeted currently for open space maintenance, and this contract is not anticipated to exceed $10,000. We have coordinated with the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, and they're supportive, among other agencies. And then Ranch Manager Ben Bohr will be managing the project. So I wanted to just give the heads up in case people see some goats come September. They will be along the stream bank on the east portion of the ranch.
Did you call them boar goats?
They're boar goats.
Like that because they belong to Ben Bohr?
No, he just conveniently, yes. Our PROS Commission met on June 5th, and the next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, July 3rd at 10 o'clock in our Suite 204. And I did see Chairperson Michael Thompson. He's here to report on behalf of the Commission today. So I turn it over to him.
Hey, thank you, Tammy. I bring you greetings from the PROS Commission. And I want to acknowledge Ben Bolden, who's also on the commission, who's here with us today. We did have our first concert by the sea in the park last Sunday, and I must say it was a tremendous success. The weather was great. The band was terrific. It was the Mighty Croon Dogs with Billy Fabiano, whose mother resides in Cambria, so there's a little local connection here. The setting was beautiful, and people were dancing and having a great time, and it was all good.
Did it make us any money?
Well, you know, not really, but I think it's a very worthwhile and terrific thing for us to do on behalf of the community, and I think the people here appreciate that.
Yeah, they do, but you know, there was a little humor in what I said, obviously, but we had broached the subject of maybe a donation box or something for the build-out reduction or whatever. And I'm sure people, when they're drinking and dancing, sometimes they're a little loose with their funds.
Pass the hat, that's probably to look at.
So something to look at, maybe a little donation box so we can continue with the programs. Well,
you know, I have to say that last year we had to cancel a program because of funding, but this year we are under budget, and we will have 5 concerts, and I think the bands that are coming up in the future, we have in July, we have John Boone and the North Coast All-Stars. A lot of you know John from his window washing activities in town, and he's a terrific artist. And then we have 3 bands that come to us highly recommended by the Templeton CSD, and they have their Wednesday night concerts in the park. We have Big Daddy's Blues Band in August. And then in September, we have the Martin Paris Band. And if you read your ticket today in the trib, that was one of the bands that they talked about being very popular countywide. And then we have Monty Mills and the Lucky Horseshoe Band in October to close out the set. So I think we have a really good, well-rounded program for the summer. Tammy and I did meet with Supervisor Gibson about the issue of park fees, and he's agreed to take care of that through his supervisorial allotment, and we certainly appreciate his coming forward and doing that for us. I personally take issue at the community having to pay $500 for use of our park. I think that's kind of an outrageous fee to charge for this purpose. And fortunately, that's been taken care of by the county once again. But I stayed after the concert to see if there was any mess that needed to be taken care of. And I think I picked up 3 pieces of paper. The people that come to these concerts clean up after themselves. They're well-behaved. And I counted somewhere close to 300. I know Tammy said 2, but I think there were more like 300 people. And it was really well attended. They were back beyond the sidewalk area. Very, very good event. You mentioned fundraising. I think one of the things that I would like to explore for next year would be the notion of sponsorships for the program. Templeton has sponsors for their concerts, and they get $750 a concert from the business community and others that sponsor these concerts. And in the citizens' recreation report that was presented to the commission several months ago, one of the recommendations was to utilize the concerts in the park for fundraising activities for some of our youth recreational activities, and I'd like to explore that further with them. We met with the CYA folks, and I think if we could get them on board, they could perhaps work with us on that, and I think it's something that has some merit for future consideration. Then finally, and another item on your consent agenda, no one asked me, but the agreement with Connie Davidson for services, I think, is something that And having personally been involved in federal and state programs for many years in the past, I'm terribly impressed with how terrific she is in her job and the work that she does to bring money and funding into this community. And she works really well with the commission, and I would really wholeheartedly support that agreement continuing. She's terrific. She really is. Any questions I can respond to, sir?
Well, I certainly like the idea about the sponsorships, especially now that we're developing right. the kind of populations at these concerts over a regular basis. That should be appealing to some sponsors.
I would think so. And again, we're talking to the Templeton folks because they've got it pretty well worked out. They've got a room just doing their thing. It was great.
I saw that there were a lot more kids, families. And the folks who were there this past Sunday, they are very neat. Everyone, some folks bring their meals or their wine, and some others just bring bottled water and their chairs and a blanket, but they pick everything up nice and neat and put it in the trash can or carry it with them. So there were a lot more, it was just a lot more active this year for this first concert.
Okay.
Did you say wine? Is that legal in the county park?
I don't know.
Yeah, let's just make like we didn't say that, you know. Let's move on to district engineer. And unfortunately, Mr. Gressens is not here, so we'll just take a pass, which is okay because he's not always the most exciting. Okay, Mr. Bodie. No offense, Bob. I'm that's just an engineer joke. Go ahead.
Okay. Now I get to be the bearer of bad news today. Now I know why newsmen have phony names. Let's see. That's Weatherman, anyway. Okay. This is a Ferrashi fish ladder today, and you can see from a lot of the other pictures I've had before that it's getting a lot smaller. Surface water's getting a lot less than it has in the past, and a couple of the other pictures coming up show the same types of things. This is Santa Rosa Lagoon today, and this is the lowest I've seen it in quite a few years. And I do the San Simeon as well. It's the smallest I've seen it in a long time. So very little water, and the water tables are dropping pretty fast as well. Here we go. I don't have my laser with me right now. You got one? Bob's got a laser.
Yeah.
There's a button right there. There we go. Blue line, this is where we are right now. And the yellow line is the maximum highs of the month. And the red line is the maximum lows that we've seen over time. Next slide here. Here again, we've got, there we go. The black line with the diamonds, this is this year's season, and that's what we'd like to see when we do it this time. We'd like to see it flatten out, and as you can see, by the third week in October, we got a rain, and it filled the basin back up. And hopefully that will happen again, and that means we just have to tighten our belt for two more billing periods, and hopefully we'll be through it. But that's if we get lucky and everything goes fine. But as you can see from this red line here, or this yellow line, it could be longer. And on my long chart, it can actually take till the following March before we get a rain. So,
when did we impose the surcharges in 2004? Do you remember?
I'll look that up while Brian is getting his report.
Yeah. But anyway, you can see that we flattened the chart out, and that's the intent. And the rate we're using water right now, we're using it pretty close as we did in 1988. And Jim ran up some numbers for me, and I've got them right here. And in 1988, which is a highest production year, as of this time of June 1st, we ran 309 acre feet. And of June 1st of 07, this year, we're 296 acre feet. And this is with all the water savings devices we've put in and everything else. We're just using a lot more water. More people, but still we're using a lot more water, and we're using about the same we did then. And
can you restate that again, Brian?
What I'm saying is that in 1988, at this time, in June 1st, mm-hmm. we'd used 309 acre feet of water. As of June 1st of this year, we've used 296 acre feet of water. Mm-hmm. Pretty similar. Quite a bit of difference in time. We have a lot. We've done a lot of water conservation. There's quite a few more people, but the thing is, we're using the same amount of water, even with all that conservation, and we're in the similar predicament. And
it does illustrate, though, that water conservation is working.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Significantly more customers. There's a broader customer base. There's more water users. Many more water users here this year than there were in 88, yet the consumption is a little bit less. So that's on the positive side. The water conservation efforts are paying off.
The downside is that there are more people here, and you're going to have to squeeze more, use less water. Everybody's going to have to use a lot less.
Right.
Yeah. So I just wanted to point that out.
Or two.
Okay. Sorry, Brian, go ahead.
No, that's quite all right. And just for an example here, get that line on here. Where are you? Did you go on? Oh, it's not on. There it goes. The O2 line is the red line. So you can see of all the last two times we've had surcharges, we're below both of those lines. So it's just prudent to do it now. And if we were to do it, wait longer, it'd be the next billing period before we can do it, and that's way too long. So I just point that out. That's 2 months to wait, too long. This is Santa Rosa well levels. The creek's still running, so they're still full, or essentially full. But that's not going to last much longer if we use too much more water. And just put the rainfall back on here. This is going to be the end of the rain season. Is going to be the end of this month. Huh. You just got to hold this just right.
What is it, Brian? While you're playing with this thing. Maybe we can multitask here.
Yeah.
What does it take for us as a board to place the surcharge issue at the next meeting?
It's on today's agenda.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. We've got it covered. I'm pointing right here. The yellow line here. This is this year's season, and 9.52. That's going to be the ending total for this year at the end of this month. And that's the lowest we've had in 34 years of recording. And that's not very much water. I'll go on. That's out of a normal 21 inches of water. And this is just the seasons for 34 years. And you can see that there's the lowest spot. And we've had a couple more low years, and those are both drought periods. And then I'll go on. And this is Pine Knolls. They're supposed to be back on site and start the second tank. It's a diamond saw cutting out the asphalt. And it's pretty thick asphalt. So we've got some services to put in, and we're getting on that. And I'm gone. That's it. Okay. I've got a few more things. Go ahead.
No. Had you finished your presentation?
Okay.
That picture up of the metal eating thing.
You know what? I left that out, but I wish I would have put it on there. I can put it in the overhead. Get a copy of it in the overhead. Either that or I can bring it back next time. And I've actually got Robert took some videos of that, so, and it's got some nice noise to it too. So I can bring that next time.
Crunching and eating up.
Yeah,
it
ate that tank up. Maybe put one in the overhead. I'll get to that one. Couple other items. On the SCADA, I reported in that that the bid pack would be out this week, and it's actually going to go out next week. So everything else will be shifted out 1 week, and that's for engineering review. You've got the biosolids. Document imaging, we've got one or two more classes to do on that, and we'll be finished with that. And we've just been had a lot of things on our plate to get that one finished. And I believe that's it. I got a couple other things. We also met with Patty Dunton, and she's a cultural specialist for Chumash to go through the proposed pipeline to the Warren property from the Omolinari well. And she's recommending that we actually take the grass out by cutting it by hand and then have her come back and take a look at the proposed area and site, make sure there's no cultural objects in the way before we actually do anything, and before that we need to do that before we actually do anything there. So we're on that part. And also yesterday, Don Villan and I went to a trees, streams, and fish in the Upper Salinas River watershed workshop, and that was quite interesting. They had a lot of features by Royce Larson, UC Cooperative Extension of San Luis County, and Lisa Thompson, also USC Cooperative Extension, Fisheries Extension, and specialist at UC Davis. And I don't know if I'm going to get his last name right, but I'll just say it's Bill T.A., UC Cooperative Extension, Integrated Hardwood, and Range Management Specialist, UC Berkeley, and Dwayne Waddell, Rancher. It was a good operation. I really enjoyed it. And, of course, Tom's a good guest to be with. So. We had a good time. I just wanted to report on that.
Yeah,
and, that's it.
I just got notice, too, that we're going to be doing the Tri-Counties fish team. Is going to be coming up in the again in San Luis Obispo, so we're a destination point now for a whole lot of this stuff.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are, and we'll be taking care of that. Any questions?
Thank you, Brian.
Okay.
Before we move on to Chief Putney, I owe Jerry McKinnon an apology because Jerry. Mr. McKinnon, Jerry wanted to speak on the water conservation issue, so I apologize, Jerry. So
no apology necessary.
Thank you.
I just overlooked, that's all.
Okay.
Jerry McKinnon, Cambria. Many times there have been comments made about people having lawns and perhaps it being a waste of water to keep those lawns alive. I would like to point out that there is a kind of a wild grass growing in Cambria alongside the roads, which was brought in many years for erosion control. If that grass is mowed, it makes a beautiful lawn, and it requires no water whatsoever. And as an outstanding example of that, if you'll just go out the door and take a look at what's around the barbecue pit, you'll see the way that grass grows. And so when you drive around town and see lawns that are well manicured, it's because people mow them, but it's completely unnecessary to water them. And if we want to protect our land from the dust and so forth, and you plant flowers and the deer come in and eat them, if you want a lawn, that's an excellent grass to use. Another example of it is alongside Main Street right here at the Vets Hall, where the shoulder rolls down. That shoulder at the far end is covered with that same grass, and because the men here keep it mowed, it makes a beautiful land cover. So let's not be too quick in condemning people who have lawns, because it may very well be that particular grass. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you know the name of that grass, Jerry?
It was brought in from Africa, and it begins with the letter A.
Okay.
How's that?
He will be done and wrapped up by the middle of or the latter part of next month. We're continuing to answer questions about the proposed defensible space draft ordinance that's out, and would encourage people to send us their written comments so that we can review those with many of the other local groups who have sought to provide input. I would be remiss if I didn't remind everybody that with the July 4th holiday week coming up next week, that all fireworks in Cambria are illegal except for the Shamel Park professional display. All the areas north, east, and south of Cambria, including out in the ocean, it's illegal to discharge both safe and sane and illegal fireworks. Anybody doing so, it's at least going to trigger confiscation. If the people start a fire, then they'll be responsible for the fire suppression costs and a citation. And if they have a finite amount of illegal fireworks in their possession, it goes from a misdemeanor to a felony and can be a result in immediate arrest. So I would ask everybody to call the Sheriff's Department, Highway Patrol, or 911 if they see someone discharging fireworks. And it's going to be interesting to see how the week plays out next week, since 4th of July is a midweek celebration. So we'll see how that goes. Recently, we've seen across the state, currently right now in Tahoe, on the Angora fire, how dry our wildland urban interface areas are. And with Brian reporting the well levels, we're looking at a lot of our beautiful forest area around here, the understory drying very quick. So we ask that people also be very cautious with campfires, warming fires, or anything they do with their barbecue that the wind doesn't carry away sparks that start a fire. We were awarded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the United States Forest Service, two grants to conduct two chipping days in Cambria. So we were lucky to receive those. We were one of only two organizations in the county to get those, so I feel very happy that we were able to get those. This year we are going to be implementing a request for donations from the public, because the federal government would like to see us support in the off years our own chipping program, and then they will respond with funding again. So in other words, they would look to us to fund our program in 2008, and then in 2009 they will come back and fund the program. They're constantly urging us, and basically put them received as the new shelter. It's a wildland shelter. A lot of people in our industry call them shake and bakes. They are an aluminized tent that we climb inside in case of a wildland fire overwhelms us. You probably read recently that, I believe it was yesterday, on the Angora fire in the Tahoe Basin, two U.S. Forest Service firefighters deployed these devices. The new ones got inside them, and the fire ran over the top of them, and they were taken to a medical facility. They weren't burned, and they survived because of these shelters. These shelters were a direct result of the tragedy that occurred in Storm King Mountain, and one of the brothers of one of the firefighters who died quit his job and started an industry to improve wildland fire safety equipment for firefighters. And so we now have these shelters, and our people are training on them right now, so that's a great benefit to us. The last thing I want to take some time about, because this is a program that's very important to me and I think important to our community, is just to review very quickly and answer any questions you may have regarding the Cambria Community Healthcare District and the Cambria CSD Fire Department's interagency paramedic agreement that started in August of 2006. As most of you know that are on the board, we have two full-time and three part-time people in the fire department who are San Luis Obispo County certified paramedics. The only thing prohibiting them from delivering advanced life support or paramedic skill level, which basically encompasses giving oxygen through advanced ways, airways for people who aren't breathing, injectable medications or intravenous medications, and also inhalable medications that may save a person's life from anything from breathing disorders to heart problems to shock or trauma incidents that may occur from a car wreck or a fall. The only thing prohibiting from that was the fact that we did not have a monitor defibrillator, we did not have the medications, the drugs, and the advanced life support equipment to carry that out. We are also not an authorized paramedic provider. So through this interagency agreement, which I believe the Cambria Community Healthcare District deserves a lot of credit for supporting this, and of course we're a cooperator in this, we've been able to make our Cambria fire engine a paramedic engine instead of a basic life support engine. To that day, as of June 1st, so this is a little bit dated information, during the 279 days, we had a paramedic on duty 125 days. Now, that number skewed and reduced quite a bit in that for almost 4 months, one of our full-time personnel had an injury and was off and was unable to work. So those numbers are a lot lower. During that period of time, There were 20 programs of success. The county health officer who had to approve this on an interim basis is now going to be visited by the Cambria Community Healthcare District and myself and our staff for a meeting to make this hopefully what will become more of a permanent arrangement where our paramedic unit can still back up the ambulance. The Cambria Community Healthcare District on July 1st will start their second unit, so they will effectively have two units. But I still believe even during this period, often the healthcare district was able to pull in a second ambulance and cover the calls. I still believe that there will be enough call volume to justify this program and use these paramedic skills who otherwise would be responding to a call and assisting the patient at a basic life support level would not have the diagnostic tools or the medicines to help a critical patient survive what might otherwise be a lethal medical or traumatic experience. So I think this is another way that our community and the two agencies have worked together. This has benefited the citizens of the community. It really hasn't cost any either agency any a very high level of expense. And I certainly would like to compliment the Cambria CHD Board of Directors. I think we just lost the speaker. Are we back? Not yet. There we go. Now we're back. I may have talked too loud and blown the speaker out. Who knows? stranger things have happened. Anyway, I'd like to thank them, our staff, and you for your support in moving forward to that and providing this, I guess you will, safety valve for the community so that our people are able to serve them in the best possible manner that we have. The stats are recorded in there. There's not a lot with that. You also have a letter. Staff report that we asked Captain Paramedic Bill Hollingsworth, the only captain in our department who's a paramedic, to put together. And I believe one of the benefits, if he was here today and tell you he's in class right now, is he would tell you that the working relationship between the Cambria Community Healthcare District Ambulance and the fire department, which was one of the concerns when we started on this program, has never been better than it is today. And not only do all of our firefighters know how to use all that equipment thoroughly because it's on our piece of equipment, but when the ambulance shows up, it's second nature because the equipment is similar. And it is a backup piece of equipment that the healthcare district currently has on the engine. It's not taking an ambulance out of service. So it's been a benefit, basically, to everybody involved. So with that, I would just remind everybody, have a safe and sane 4th of July. Please call 911 if you see anybody on the ramp.
Mr. President, members of the board, with full knowledge that accounts are even more boring than engineers, I'll be as quick as possible. We've contracted again with Moss Levy Hartzman CPAs to conduct the CCSD's opinion audit for the fiscal year that's ending June 30th, 2007. The cost this year is going to be $12,400. Last year is $11,900. This is the fifth and final year of the contract. We'll go out and request proposals for new auditors next year. That's standard. Usually you don't go longer than 5 years with the same auditor. On budget matters, what I call major cash disbursements using $100,000 criteria, the only one this past month, May 2007, was $174,000 to the State Water Resources Control Board for the note under the State Revolving Fund Loan Program. And the proceeds from that was used to upgrade the wastewater treatment plant. And again, department managers were provided monthly budget data for the period ended May 31st. And during the process, all revenue and expenditure accounts in the operating budget were reviewed and projected out through June 30th, 2007 for year-end projection. I'm going to cover the largest areas, regardless if there's variations or large variations there, and then the large variations, variances real quick. On property taxes, water revenue, and wastewater revenue, and this is service sales, they're all roughly 30% of the overall revenue, pretty close to equal. They all will be coming in slightly higher than projected for the current fiscal year, but only property taxes is what I would deem significantly higher. It's roughly $182,000. There is some give and take in that. We get property taxes in large bulk in December and April, but every month we get some as it's collected. One month in recent years, we actually had to pay back $15,000. The highest we've gotten in June was actually over $100,000. But at this point, looks like we'll come in higher than projected. And again, the service sales are slightly higher than projected. Personnel costs, which are over 50% operating expenditures, will be approximately $165,000 higher than originally budgeted, although they're coming in $21,000 I have in the report. Legal fees for the Parks and Rec Department are projected to be $210,000 higher than budgeted due to the KEMAC trial costs. And then sludge hauling in the wastewater department appears will be approximately $190,000 more than budgeted. So the projected results by department for the fiscal year coming up compared to the original budget, and I would say in every case it's much closer to the mid-year amended budget, but we did it based on the original budget. Fire department has a $82,000 variance to the good, brackets are to the good. Facilities management is approximately $40,000, unfortunately not to the good. Administration, $121,000 approximately to the good. Parks and Recreation, $277,000 approximately over budget. Resource Conservation, $46,000. Water, $1,459,000. Again, I want to point out that loan payback of over $1.5 million is what makes that number jump up. If you back that out, they actually did better than projected. And then wastewater, approximately $190,000. And then the reserve balance as of May 31st, 2007 was $5,725,000 approximately, a net decrease of $600,000 from April 30th, 2007. Since May 31st, an additional $350,000 has been transferred from LAIF to meet accounts payable and payroll needs. And if there's any questions?
Jerry McKinnon would like to speak on this issue.
Question has been answered. Thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions from the board?
Just the question, the amount, an anticipated amount in the general fund, is that allocated now or will that be carried forward to the next year?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
You're talking about the increase in property tax revenues?
Increase in property
tax. $182,000.
Oh, okay. Well, that gets allocated to various departments. Most of it does go to the fire department, and that is the reason they show the surplus. The district does not do a zero-sum budget the way I worked at the state, and every year, you know, it doesn't matter if you had a surplus the prior year, you lose it. You know, here it doesn't roll over in terms of the fact that they get that much more money next year. Sorry, I stand correct. I keep... leaving out Parks and Recreation because of
the
Parks and Rec,
fee.
No,
yeah.
It will be a deficit.
Yeah,
I was thinking in terms of the larger, and that's strictly
the
KEMAC, right?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's now approximately 2:25. We'll take a 10-minute recess. Thank you. Thank you. Tammy, it's time for the consent agenda. Would you mind reading the items?
I thought Director Coben was going to do
her
Coast
sorry.
Side Smart
Growth
presentation.
I'm sorry. Paul. Go ahead, please.
All right. I'm going to go to the...
Well, Last month, I reported I'd been to several meetings and that I would like to tell you about them. And so today is the smart growth idea. Let's see. Are we ready, Carlos? The first thing I want to say, I'm presenting this because I went to a meeting. I'm not an expert in it. And I spent last night trying to put a PowerPoint together, and I'm also not an expert in that. My intention was to get somebody that could fix it up and put pretty pictures and things like that, but that didn't work. So you have this as it is. At any rate, the Smart Growth Network is a partnership of public, private, and government organizations whose aim is to improve development practices in the United States. And that's their website. This is their brochure, and my plan was to move some of the beautiful pictures in here and put them on the slide, but I didn't make it. So there are pictures of communities that are, as you'll see, compact. People can walk to services. There's neighborhood parks. They represented us. Ann Wyatt attended with me. She's on the County Planning Commission. And there were people from the various other local governments and the other CSDs in the county. So county supervisors Bruce Gibson and Jim Patterson were the hosts, and they introduced the subject and closed it. And the other speakers were the council, SLO Council of Governments, LOCOG, and the SLO County Planning Department. The keynote speaker was a fellow called Governor Paris Glendening of Maryland. Now, he's not the governor at the time now, but at the time, He was the one that initiated this concept of smart growth. And again, he showed us wonderful pictures, again, of Maryland and places that where they have instituted this kind of thinking in their development and showed us the joys of it.
Yeah, it's only like 10 more.
He says the benefits of smart growth is that it protects the environment, the natural resources. It promotes equity with access to services for all, and enables a strong, vibrant community. These are the 10 principles. You have them in the handout of the yellow sheet that's attached to the, the PowerPoint. So these 10 principles, I'm just going to go, 7 principles, I'm going to go through them really quickly and just tell you what that means. Now let's see. Excuse me, I think I missed a slide. I didn't say this. The county supervisors adopted smart growth principles and directed the planning department to use them as a decision-making framework to guide the long-term development. And now that I look back after I had this, I think about the LCP. I think we see remnants of this kind of thinking in that when they talk to us about mixed land uses and that sort of thing. I think that comes out of this kind of thinking. Now, the idea for this workshop was that they've been working on it for some time, and I remember a couple of years ago going to an initial meeting, and what their idea is to go through the county and engage as many decision makers and people who have ideas and some influence in the community to bring them to talk together. So that's what the workshop was about. They presented the ideas, and then they used a very interesting technology where we all had a little buzzer thing, and so they could ask questions, and then we pushed the answer to it. So they could immediately get the sense of how many of biking, carpools, and that kind of thing, and again, to reduce the amount of pollution and our dependency on automobiles. Streets should be designed then to accommodate choices, more bike lanes, and I think that's happening. We're seeing that going on in San Luis. And then, of course, the plan is to reduce congestion and air pollution. Create housing choices. The plan is for quality housing for people of all income levels. We heard from Lillian this morning the dire need we have in that area. Of course, we're all familiar with it, and have committed ourselves to focus on affordable housing. Use infrastructure resources more efficiently. Again, I think where water is our issue, how do we divide up and use water? We talk about, for instance, where we're creating a variety of places. maybe we allocate water in a different way to attached housing, accessory units, multifamily dwellings, and so that sort of thing. So it's, again, think about how to make housing available, affordable, and in a variety of modes. Create compact neighborhoods, smart growth principle. The idea is to make it so people can walk to services, walk to school, walk to work, walk to play. And people could, where there'll be open space and chance for people to get together. So that kind of thing makes it it efficient, it's a more aesthetic use of space, encourages walking and biking. And then we should expand public transportation, even here in Cambria. I've always thought we should do a little bit more with the trolley, get it to bring people into town for smaller trips. The next principle is to build a strong sense of place by making use of existing assets and making people feel like they have a ownership in the community. So they're suggesting make better use of public land, improve infrastructure such as roads. That's definitely an issue for Cambria. Refurbish historic sites. I thought our Heritage Day on Sunday is moving us in that direction. There's a great sense of community as people came there, and they're going to look for people to be docents and to help accumulate the history of Cambria and to share it with their neighbors. Cluster service buildings and offices. Again, we're talking about mixed land uses, which I think is the next slide. Oops, yes, see. Oh, man. No. Okay. Ah, I knew there was one more. Preserve open space, farmland, natural beauty as their fifth principle, I believe it is. And, of course, that's a natural for us that we talk about and think about that all the time, and we've done very well as a community. And, obviously, the reasons are it promotes clean air, clean water, habitat protection, provides access to natural areas, parks, and green belts for recreation, which I'm proud that we're moving into that as a community. And I want to add parenthetically, this whole discussion about obesity in San Luis Obispo County, and the supervisors took that seriously, that report, and they went ahead and added a nutritionist to the staff. But like Lillian mentioned, feel very strongly that nutrition is only one side of the coin. We need to provide more recreational opportunities where children and people can get out and play together and exercise. So I think that's something that we should focus on of this smart growth idea. It enhances the well-being of the citizens. Okay, out of all of that, reading it, looking at the website, and going to the workshop, this is what I think the county has said to us, darn it. The first is to encourage community and stakeholder collaborations, and that means the developers, the people with the money, the people with the land, the people with the need, and get everyone together and plan together and take actions together. The next point, as far as I can tell, is to make development decisions predictable, fair, and cost-effective. I think everybody has complained about the planning department and county planning and how hard it is to get things through. And these are their words I put up there. I took it out of one of their documents. So this is what they're working towards. And the third one is strengthen and direct development towards existing communities. Again, not sprawl, but to bring things closer in, increase density, get multi-use going for each piece of land. And then lastly, they're talking about strengthen regional cooperation. So that means we should talk to Napomo and see how they're doing and see how we're doing and where we can share our ideas. So that's what I got out of this day, and then taking the time to go to the website, which I should say was in the first.
Pammy, now it's, I believe, your turn again to discuss the consent agenda.
Consent agenda. Excuse me. 6A is to approve expenditures for the month of May 2007. 6B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meetings from a meeting from May 24, 2007. 6C is to receive and file the report from the Citizens Recreation Committee. 6D is to adopt Resolution 42-2007 approving an amendment to the Special District Risk Management Authority Joint Powers Agreement. 6E is to adopt Resolution 43-2007 approving the employment agreement between the CCSD and the General Manager for 5 years for 2007 through 2012. 6F is to adopt Resolution 44-2007 approving the professional services agreement with Davidson Associates for fiscal years 2007 through 2010. 6G is to adopt Resolution 45-2007 rejecting claim number GC3057 per the recommendation of the Special District Risk Management Authority. 6H is to adopt Resolution 46-2007 approving a carryover of the operating budget for the first half of fiscal year 2007-2008. 6I is to approve the request for a 12-month extension of a commercial intent to serve for ED Hotels, LLC, APN 022.381.002 for the Cambria Shores Inn. 6J is to approve the extension of an intent to serve letter for Kestrel Point Senior Care Facility, Michael Clark applicant, APN 024.191.052. And 6K is to adopt Resolution 47-2007, approving a notice of completion on Phase 1 restoration of the Guthrie Bianchini House and Gardens, and authorize the General Manager to file the notice of completion with the County Recorder. 6L was pulled for separate consideration, and 6M was postponed. So that's the full consent agenda.
Before I entertain a motion, there's a citizen named Jerry McKinnon who would like to discuss items 6A and 6H. That's okay. You're more than just somebody.
Well, anyhow, I'm looking at the expenditure report on page 11 under our electric bills.
Thank you. Stuff, because I don't recall seeing this in there before under that particular category. I may be wrong, but I'm curious as whether or not this will be a continuing item, because if it is a continuing item, that accounts for $12,205.44 a year that we're paying for street lights. I don't know which street lights that we're talking about, whether it's the old street lighting districts that were here 30 years ago or whether this is something new. That's my current concern on that. The second item, six F?
6H. Yes,
approving 6H, okay, sending the carrying the budget over into the next fiscal year. Are there going to be public meetings on this particular issue so that the public can have some input on the manufacture and develop of next year's budget? Of course, I'm wearing the hat again. I'm concerned about the maintenance of this building, and at one time I heard that the maintenance of the building would be considered under the new budget. So if we're going to forestall developing a new budget into the future, I'm afraid it's going to throw us once again into the rainy season, if we get any rain again. And that, of course, delays any maintenance on the building, particularly its roof, where there have been some leaks in the past that I think should be repaired before the rains get here. Those are my two questions. If I could have them answered, thank you very much.
Frankly, I'm thank you for bringing that out. That's not the only thing I missed today, but Tammy, what's...
Okay, on the streetlights, those are for the existing streetlights that are along Moonstone Beach in the Lamert subdivision and in the West Village, and there's a couple of straggler one-pole lights that, unfortunately, from previous staffs and previous boards of directors, those districts did lapse. As part of the assignment that you gave us last year with regard to the new streetlights, we will look to bring those assessment districts back. But right now, we've been paying that, and I want to say that I reported with all those many Main Street light reports I've had to put before you all publicly, that I think it's about $20,000 a year that the CCSD pays of its general funds for the streetlights within this community that currently exist. That's the streetlight answer. The carryover budget, I appreciate Jerry's comments, and what the carryover budget does is it snapshotted everything through December, and we actually looked at actual expenses from last year will be, so we'll know what our bond financing costs might be, so that will come back to the community for finalization. As far as Vets Hall is concerned, I always appreciate Jerry's comments and his love and concern for this facility, because we have a staff that has the same love and concern for this facility as well. So they will use their carryover budget amounts to keep the very close eye that they do on the roof. We are very well aware that, you know, not besides the fact that it may have problems, it doesn't cause us pleasure to drive by because it's quite ugly, because it is old. But we have a very fine staff here that does a good job at keeping that thing patched and making sure that it doesn't leak down into this facility. If it did, I promise you I would hear about it. You would hear about it, everyone, because this hall is used just about every single day within this community. So just to, again, extend my appreciation for Jerry's comments, but I do rely very heavily on Ben Bohr, Carlos, and Richard, and they do a good job taking care of the facility.
When is the lighting thing going to come before the board?
Well, since we have our new finance manager, he is working on that now, and he's kind of got a little bit of room, and his priority right now is a long-term financial management plan with Black & Veatch, obviously. And he has been working with me with employee negotiations. But he will be working with Art in the coming weeks. He just attended one function over in Atascadero for business improvement districts. As you recall, that was one of the opinions Art gave us. So the options are there, and he'll be working with us so that we can bring that back to you.
And that would be roughly when? Are we talking August, September?
Yeah, the fall. That's probably okay. A good time.
So we'll do like a complete analysis of all our lighting obligations and stuff?
Yes.
Very good. I actually
think that I'm going to have a map, too, so that everybody knows where they are. I mean, obviously, you know where the bigger ones are, but we actually have a few on just single lights throughout the community.
Just because Jerry said he never saw that before, but that we've had lighting for years, certainly before I was ever on here and before you were here, so that we've been paying electric.
We have, and it could very well be that maybe we didn't break it out as like that we did here, but you know, with every new manager and especially finance executives, you know, things are done differently and reports are prepared differently. So it could be that, you know, they're just more broken out now with regard to what facilities that they are going to.
No one else from the public wishes to speak on the consent agenda, so I will entertain a motion.
Mr. President, before we get to a motion, we have two items on the consent calendar that will approve extensions of sort of policy review over these extensions so that we can understand what's going on and revisit those policies and determine whether they ought to be changed.
Sounds reasonable, don't you think?
Thank you.
Is that enough guidance for staff? Thank you. Okay, I will entertain a motion a third time.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
All those in favor, please state aye.
Aye.
Hearing no opposition, carries. Let's move on to item 7A, which is a public hearing to consider the adoption of Resolution 48-2007, authorizing a 5.2% CPI adjustment in the fire suppression assessment benefit.
So this is our annual opportunity for an increase or an adjustment to the fire suppression assessment benefit that was voted on by the Cambrians here, and the proposed fiscal impact to increase this by 5.2% would be $19,334 increased revenues for the fire department for the fiscal year 2007-2008. The maximum that can be charged is 5.4%, but the State of California Division of Labor Statistics and Research recorded a 5.2% increase for the designated area for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2006, which is the most recent year fiscally available. So staff is recommending the 5.2%. Now, you'll notice in the staff report that there were some rounding issues and discrepancies with regard, because this is the first year that I actually put in the staff report the rates, the new rates, compared with last year's rate. So that was corrected to by Chief Putney and Allen. It doesn't mean that people were billed incorrectly. It's just that we've been putting it in the report incorrectly. So for the public's information and those at home viewing, for a vacant lot, last year's rate was $15.44. The proposed rate with this 5.2% increase is $16.24. For single-family residence that's less than 3,600 square feet, last year's rate was $77.20. The proposed rate is $81.20. For a single-family resident that is greater than 3,600 square feet, last year's rate was $115.80. The proposed rate is $121.80. And then there's a range for commercial ventures. Last year's range was $231.60 to $1,966.90. And this year's proposed increase of 5.2%
PPI adjustment in the fire suppression assessment benefit.
Second the motion.
All those in favor, please state aye.
Aye.
Hearing none opposed, the motion passes unanimously. We're now up to item 7B.
7B is a public hearing to adopt Resolution 49-2007 authorizing the Mission Country proposed base year rate adjustment in the amount of 4.55%. You'll see attached to the report the Mission Country's disposal, their application for the rate adjustment effective July 1st of this year, so that's this weekend. Financial statements for their years ending December 31st, 2006 and 05. And then they provide, Tom Martin's here today to provide what the justification is for their rate adjustment. And I also attached their rate increase notification just so that you can see what will be going with the utility or with the garbage bills whenever they send those out that notifies the public what the rate adjustments will be. So Tom Martin, he's here today, and he can make his presentation on behalf of Mission Country and be available for questions. Tom?
Now, Tom, before you speak, I have to tell you that this is not the first time this has been on the agenda. The board has, is this the second time it's been on, or third? Second? And the community has been, I think, virtually unanimous in the plaudits that we have recognized with your firm. The service has been flawless, as far as I can tell. I've received no complaints personally. I've heard that the your employees are extremely professional, timely. When there are complaints, they respond immediately. They're efficient. So I just thought you ought to know that, because sometimes garbage people get garbage, you know, in more ways than one. But I do like to recognize quality when it's there, and there's no question you guys run a good, tight ship, and I appreciate it.
That's good to hear, and the credit belongs with the employees, because they're the ones that do it day to day. I don't really have anything to say. If you have any sense to the one-can service levels, which is the goal of the way you've set your pricing structure, but just like water, it doesn't necessarily mean how much you use of a commodity. The more we recycle, the trucks have to go down the street, same street every week after week, so it doesn't quite generate the revenue. So I wish it would be lower, but it is the 4.55. And apparently I need to talk to the fire chief about using his index instead of the one I use, because essentially it was lower than his. Other than that,
Bob, I order you not to talk to that guy.
And if you have any specific questions, I'm more than happy to address those.
Any questions?
Tom, you might just mention how great the savings is if you can get down to one can. It's very significant.
Oh, in Cambria, you guys have 100% variable rate structure. If you are currently in the two can, you're going to end up paying $27.67 a month, and you can cut that in half if you can get down right to one can. So you can literally cut your garbage bill in half if you just recycle more of it and throw it in the blue can.
Right.
So we encourage all of you to do that. Cambria already has the highest percentage of OneCan customers of anybody from San Simeon to Napomo. So you guys are doing a good job. There are a few people out there, though, who can recycle more and get down to the lower thing. It'll kill my revenue, but that's the goal of the whole plan, the way the pricing's set up, is to get you down into one can, the minimum size.
It's kind of like in my business. You know, there's no crime. You know? All right. All right. Any no comments from the public? If there are no comments from my colleagues, I'll entertain a motion.
I'd like to move the recommended action, but just a question, Tammy. I'm missing something in my mind. What did we do about the the amount that the district gets of this? I've forgotten the term. Sorry.
The franchise fees?
Staff did consider the difference in the franchise fees. We're going to bring that back next year.
Next time. Okay. Sorry. My brain skipped a cog there. At any rate, slipped a cog.
I'll second Joan's motion.
Thank you.
All those in favor, please state aye.
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 Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom.
I also want to say one other thing. Tom has been not only has provided excellent service, but he's also his firm is very community oriented, and they sponsored the SAM. He was here when we talked about that monitor, that leak detector monitor, and they've agreed to fund $3,500 to begin a purchase of those leak detector monitors. And hopefully we can spread it around in the community, and that should further aid our water conservation program. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. Okay, item 7C. Are we ready? Okay. The next public hearing is to adopt Resolution 50-2007, the proposed implementation of water conservation surcharge rates. Before I discuss this, I just want you to know that we did forget that one item on the consent agenda. District Council just reminded me that LAFCO ballot. I'll bring that back when we get to the regular business, because it is like a regular business item. Okay, so as we talked earlier, you saw the presentation by staff with regard to how our lake or stream levels look and what our outlook is like. It's not very bright, obviously. This obviously is not something that staff enjoys having to impose or to recommend, but it is the right way to do be supportive of our water conservation program. I just want to say a few comments before I get started in some of the details. First of all, as a staff, we sat and said, okay, what's going to be the best recommendation and how can we do it? We worked really hard in 2004 to get, along with you all and the community, to get what we thought was a very good program with regard to water surcharging. We brought it to you all, and through the discussion that we had in open session, of course, the increases, the proposed surcharges were increased from what staff originally recommended, and that was back with the former general manager, Vern Hamilton. We've just taken that snapshot in 04, and what we're recommending today is to just have a status quo program. So you'll see that, and for the public's information, it's not going to change at all. The only thing that will change will be the family relief application. I renamed it. That's it. It used to be called an appeal application, and it's really a family relief application, and I included it in your packet. And we want to make sure that it was translated into Spanish, so there is a Spanish version as well. But you'll see the same documents, and I know it's been a few years, but these I actually just went back to the 2004 agenda packet, the electronic version, and Brian prepared the report with regard to the specifics of the situation that we're faced with right now. We have in a couple of weeks a nice training session during a staff meeting that we will be training them in the front office and for the customer service people, but they're already starting their work knowing that this item is on today. We're proposing that the conditions of our water supply are extreme and that we need to put in these aggressive water conservation measures so that we can ensure ourselves that we'll have a reliable water supply and get us through the winter months. Brian's right when he comments that Today's recommendation by staff is that we don't know how long this is going to last. We just feel it's the thing that we need to do. And so we're asking with this action that you take today and after you hear from the constituents that it stay in place until we bring it back to you to formally rescind it. So we're not making a recommendation that it will only be for two billing periods or just for the one. We're going to be closely monitoring and reporting monthly as we normally do so that you all can keep up with what the lake levels look like and how those things are working out. Obviously, it's the appropriate time. I've put in the staff report, and certainly after today's action, we'll have this stuff published on our website as well, that we are recommending that there be a family relief for surcharges. And as you recall from last year, surcharges that are being proposed begin at water consumption within the 13 to 20 unit range. So anyone who is currently using 0 to 12 units, there will be no surcharges. Now, that's the majority of our customers, just so everyone understands clearly, that's about two-thirds of the customers. And so what we do and what you all approved in 2004 was that for families, as long as they completed this application, you have it in your packet, we'll have it available. It's simple. It just asks that the customer who has the account apply for it. It asks for a service address and a phone number, and it asks for the people who are living in the household. And this, for them to be eligible, the customers must have three or more persons living full-time at the service address. It's very simple to fill out. It'll be available online. It'll be available in our office. We ask that people who are going to apply for family relief make sure that they apply before the billing date. What happened last time, even after board approval, is they would come in after the due date of the bill, and we can't go back in and drop off late fees and all of that stuff. So the application is very clear that in order to be eligible for the relief, for family relief and surcharges, the application must be submitted prior to the due date of the utility service bill. Now, this is the 10th due date, not the late due date. If it's received after the due date, it will not be eligible until the next billing period. And quite frankly, this is just because of the systemic issues that we have with our billing. 2004 ended, and you know, you all rescinded those charges. So this family application will family relief application will only be applicable as long as these surcharges are applicable. Relief will be granted for families up to 20 units of water, and no surcharge relief will be available for any water use in excess of 20 units. Remember all the surcharge appeals we got from families who used more than 20 units last time? We're keeping with the same program because obviously even families larger, the three or more, need to conserve their water. So we're just encouraging that with the advance notice that we're giving, with the reporting that we've been doing at these board meetings, with the availability of staff who can provide any information at all to families, that they have an obligation and they're encouraged just as much as the rest of us who have either smaller families or just one or two people living in the household to conserve water as best possible. So we're leaving those requirements and qualifications for family relief exactly the same as they were in 2004. So nothing changed except the title of the document. Okay? It just says water conservation surcharge family relief application, and it used to say appeal. You'll see also the Exhibit A that's attached to the back of the Resolution 50-2007, which sets forth the surcharge rates. And they're effective July 1st, 2007. Now, please understand that making them effective July 1st, 2007 means your consumption starts July 1st, which is Saturday, right? July 1st? That means we don't get those bills until September 10th. But just for everyone's information here today and those out that may be viewing this on television, it just means that you need to start Saturday conserving your water. This Exhibit A, you'll see too in your packet on the goldenrod sheet, pretty much mirrors the flyer that's going to go in the July 10th water bill. Okay, so that means only 10 days are going to go by that people may not be aware of surcharges, and then they're going to get this flyer in the July 10th bill, and then we'll get a jillion phone calls about this, which we're happy to be able to reply as best possible. Just ask for some patience and cooperation while we return calls. But you'll see Exhibit A starts with the 25% surcharge on water for 13 to 20 units of water for the two-month billing period, a 50% surcharge on water for 21 to 30 units, from 31 to 40 units, 100% surcharge, 41 to 50 units of water, 150% surcharge, 51 to 60 units of water, a 300% surcharge, and 61 and above units of water, it's a $450 surcharge on a water bill. Now, that's for residential. The commercial is down, and if they have any questions whatsoever, give us a few weeks because we're in the process of updating it, and then they could call and find out what that threshold is for surcharges. I'm trying to think if there was anything else. The flyer is here. If people want to, just for interesting information, for a 25%, we ran some bills for residential examples, and if you use 13 units of water, your residential account, your bill would typically be, just for water, $60.27. If you fall within the surcharge period and you use that same amount of water, your bill with the 25% surcharge will be $75.34. 30 units, your bill right now is $156.84 for water. You'll fall within the 50% penalty if you continue to use the same consumption, which makes your new bill, your surcharge bill, $235.26. And then go on up to the very highest. We have this available. It will be on the flyer that gets mailed to each customer. For anyone who uses more than 61 units, which is not a lot of accounts, okay, just so you know, there's very few, that bill right now is $351.45, but when they get tagged with their 450% penalty for surcharges, their bill will be $1,932.98 just for the water. Now, the other question that we got questioned about or comments have been made is, oh, the CCSD, you're doing this just to raise revenues. This is the way that you get to make more money. We have the facts to dispute that. In fact, just the fact that consumption goes down, for any layperson, you would understand that means that sales are down, so revenues are down. It also impacts the wastewater fund, too, because that's based on consumption, water consumption. So both funds, after the first month, the first billing period, and people say, oh, wow, they're serious, they are going to surcharge us, you can see a dramatic drop in the consumption and the revenues. So it is not a way that staff says, hey, we got a shortfall in revenues and water and wastewater, we need more money, we need surcharges. That's not the reason why we would recommend it. This creates a mountain of work for staff. It's a difficult decision for us to have to bring to you. It's a difficult decision that you're faced with the many constituents that you represent within Cambrian. And it's difficult for us to know that it does impact people financially at home. So I just want to make sure that if anyone has any questions, feel free to contact any of us at the CCSD office. We will, like I said, be training all of the new folks who haven't been around for the prior years. There are many of us who were here in 2002 and 2004. We feel very competent and confident to be able to recommend this action. So with that, unless any other staff member has comments, Brian, you didn't have any?
Just one. I just remind everybody that you're going to have to shift gears fast and just save all the water you can. And the reason we're doing this is just the water table's going down too fast. And there could become a point in time where we just have to shut them off, and we don't want to do that. And so we're just trying to save the water so we can get through hard times, should it not rain for a long time. And that could happen. I mean, we've never really experienced a real drought here. 74 was pretty bad. They pulled Santa Rosa 17 feet below sea level. That's never going to happen again. So before that happens again, we'll shut wells off. And the only way to get water is bring it in bottles. So I don't want that to happen, so we're going to try to reserve what we have. Okay.
May I make this yellow flyer that you intend on putting into the billings, what, July 10th, is it? Is that when they go out?
Yes.
I remember last time there was a significant amount of people that, even though we publicized it and even though we had public hearings, nevertheless claimed that they felt surprised and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So perhaps would it be too late to edit some of the language on the yellow flyer, or is it?
No, not at all. That's why it's proposed for today.
Well, maybe you can bold or increase the font or do something to the language that says the surcharges will be effective beginning July 1, 2007 and will not appear on your bill until September. And if that can just kind of stick out, because I remember constituents saying that if they would have known that they would have taken action before they got the bill or something. So,
yeah, and actually a staff member did recommend that. Our finance manager did, and I just did not put it in here because I knew I'd be taking your input as well. Thank you for that, besides other comments you might have. It's also going to be in the newsletter. I approved the final of the newsletter that will be going out on July 10th as well, and we actually stuck a little blurb in the very front page when we have the discussion about the creek level. So you'll see that. They'll see that as well, and I'll see if we can bold that, too, in that newsletter.
Alan was thinking like...
He was
like your
lawyer.
Alan, you are a smart
managers.
Guy. I knew that when I first saw you.
So thank you. That's very good input.
Just a press release as well with that.
I'll have Connie.
If an eligible family exceeded 20 units, the surcharge was based upon the greater than 12 unit consumption. In other words, if they went to 21 units, they were treated as if they exceeded 12 units. I've always found that to be patently unfair. If we're going to grant a 20 unit maximum to families, it seems to me the surcharge ought to start at 21 units and not revert back to 12.
That would be a change, a policy decision to make that change. But that is, he is absolutely correct. That's exactly what happens.
But then...
So it's when they exceed their 20 units that we revert back to the schedule and they would actually be charged the 25% or the 100% or 50%.
Since the average household has either 1.9 or 2.6, depending on which we're looking at, that would make 20 units possible for... a whole lot of people.
Only families.
No. It doesn't affect the eligibility mm-hmm. for the program. What it does, let's see if I can explain this. If an eligible family uses in excess of 20 units of water, then the surcharge is based upon the schedule that you see here in the staff report. In other words, we surcharge them back to charge for that extra water. We apply the surcharge to that extra water that we're allowing them to use. So if they use 21 units of water, then we surcharge them all the way back to the same surcharge that somebody who uses 12 units of water would have paid. I don't know if I'm explaining that correctly, but...
No, I'm actually thrilled that you remembered that because I just conferred with Monique only because I think she may have been the billing technician back then. We believe that it would be a whole lot easier to administer if it was the way you're describing it, so that the surcharges were just that for families. Now, let's make sure the viewing public understands that's just for family relief. That apply. That's right. Exactly right.
They have to apply. They have to be eligible.
And they have to meet the eligibility requirements.
Yeah. And now that I understand it, I would agree to support that.
I think that's reasonable. Ms. Hoban?
I know the pat answer is to raise our prices. Well, while that is a consideration, we also have to remember that most of our customers are low-income people. So it wouldn't be fair to have to, what we feel, to penalize them because everybody else is coming over at the same time. So I'd like to ask for some sort of a consideration for surcharges on the laundromat because it would help us a lot. And this is according to my husband's statistics, and I have to clarify it with him from where he got it from. If you wash 3 loads of laundry at home, you're using about 120 gallons of water. You wash 3 loads of laundry at the laundromat, you're only using 20 gallons. So that's a big savings right there for the water district. And yes, putting in better equipment and all that sort of stuff is an answer. However, that takes money as well. And our water bill usually is about $3,000 to $4,000 every billing. So when you consider the fact that the whole town, residents, hotels, restaurants, tourists are all going to be coming out to use our facility, and then we personally, we feel like we're being penalized for that. And so we'd like to ask some consideration from the CCSD as far as that's concerned. So, thank you.
Question. How many EDUs of water do you have? Do you know?
You know, I don't. I'm not prepared because I wasn't planning on coming here, but I realized I was at your workshop, and so I should be here. to see what the discussion is, and gave up a pedicure to be here, so I'm not prepared.
The reason I ask is perhaps the laundromat doesn't have a sufficient number of EDUs, particularly in a situation like this, which I think is reasonable to expect, where people are going to come to the laundromat instead of...
Well, the general manager back then made exceptions for certain of the commercial activities, and their thresholds are higher because we don't go out and give out extra allocations to folks in town. So I'm sorry that I didn't bring that paperwork, and Art and I have actually discussed your comment, because it seems like you, where was I before? Oh, when you came to the rate hearing.
Yeah.
We had talked about that independently outside of that when she made those comments, and we know that we think we probably need to discuss that again. So there's a chart.
We stayed open. All the money we made would be going to the CCSD. And so my husband decided to just take a vacation that he hadn't had, and so that's why we closed the laundromat, because it really was no choice. We had no choice. We would either just work for the CCSD during that period of time, or, you know, just close down and not do it.
Could we, well, unless you had something really formulated,
the case is patently reasonable, yeah. I think. I mean, there's something that ought to be done.
Could we just direct the general manager to work out something that seems appropriate and just report on that next time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's amazing what an English accent can do. Okay.
I was going to comment, because I just confirmed again what Director Sanders was bringing up with regard to the family relief, just so that it's clear, and I think it is that what he is requesting, which staff is in agreement with, is that each unit above 20 units for family relief, that's how it'll be surcharged. So when they hit 21, one unit will be surcharged at 50%, because that's the category that they're in.
Right.
So it's every unit above 20. So right. I just wanted to provide that additional clarification.
I would like to I recall in the last circumstance like this that also there was a number of appeals from folks that had health issues involved with regards to, you know, where they had to have...
Those will all be updated. In fact, that's what Monique and Courtney and I were talking about, is all of those who are exempt because of medical reasons that are certified by a physician's note that we have in the file. So we're going to update those records as well. We do that. This is a good time period to do that. So thank you for bringing that up. We've all been together through three of these now, so...
It seems like the feelings and thoughts revolve around money, but the real issue is how to lower water consumption, and that's if we could all try to keep that in mind, and even those of us who only use 12 probably should try to use less. You know.
I'll entertain a motion.
I move the recommended action.
Is that the only public hearing comment?
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
One?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Second the motion.
Now, that's with the Director Sanders modification, correct?
Staff's request for modification to his January-February 2007 utility bill for 1750 Dovedale Avenue be denied. Therefore, there would be no fiscal impact. We provided in the report that the consumption in question is for 61 units of water billed for the January-February 2007 billing period. It was a new account that was started on January 4th of 2007, so there's no historical data to create an average of the previous year's usage, but the previous two billing periods was 39 units. The customer's total bill in question for their water, $353.05. Their sewer, $153.24, for a total bill of $507.29. The customer stated this is their second home and that no one lived in the home during January, but they resided in it on February 19th and 20th. Initially, the reason why they found out that they may have had some water loss is because we called them as a result of popping up on the high-low report that was just previously reported on by Jim and Corey. Mrs. Nekanoff stated that she believed they had replaced a water heater, and then they also had the inside of the house painted beginning January 17th. Our initial inspection by the water department on March 6th revealed no leaks. The meter was not turning. The property looked dry, and it was not excessively landscaped. There was a hot tub, but it wasn't full. We made a second inspection on April 20th and revealed the same information. And then a third visit was made in May because of the customer's request, and we showed them how the leak detector worked, as well as we provided assistance in locating potential sources of leaks or areas for high usage, which is what Jim elaborated to earlier that we will do if they call and ask. We found no evidence on the fault or fault on the part of the district. The meter was functioning correctly and accurately registering their consumption. There was a painting contractor working at the property during the time period, as explained by the customer, and we think maybe that's an explanation for the high water use, because their subsequent bill for March-April was for 16 units of water when you compare the two. Therefore, we recommend the water bill mod be denied. I have to say that after I published the report, Mr. Nekanoff wrote the letter that's on the back to the CCSD Board of Directors. He asked this morning that I read it into the record because he wasn't able to make it here today.
I don't think it's necessary to read
okay.
it. We
so
have it.
His other two comments that he made that he wanted, because he was not able to represent himself today here in person, was that he does have two people who are actively managing or are monitoring his property. One person is very responsible, and she checks on the property. He didn't say how often, but said it was often enough that he, you know, knows that, you know, there could be no leaks for any extensive period of time, and that he has a gardener that's there every week.
Observation. Has taken on its own initiative to notify folks that there might be water loss. Were it not for staff contacting the Nekanoffs, their $500 water bill could have been four figures. I mean, who knows what it could have been?
But my hesitation was not on account of any reluctance to make a motion. I was catching my breath.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, that's when you think about it. I didn't want to get it.
They're very nice people. He was elaborating this morning about them being new to Cambria, or, you know, just starting the account, and that they just really don't have any explanation. And they say, we don't. But I explained to him that as part of our operations, we have to come here publicly and report to you that there were not any operational deficiencies, and I can't see how the rest of the ratepayers should have to compensate for someone who is responsible for the water on their side of the meter. And in this instance, they can't suggest that there was any fault on the part of the district either. So,
in each and every case in which we've decided to offer some relief, there's been some justification for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's been an extraordinary event, a burst pipe or an undetected leak, something that would make for a rational explanation as to what happened. But in this case, there's none, and I just don't see any justification for providing the relief because there is no evidence of anything extraordinary happening.
Sounds like one of those mysteries that... But unexplainable where that water went.
It ain't such a mystery.
Well, and they were moving in, and we all know what it's like to move in and out of homes. I mean, there's cleaning, and besides the fact that the house was being painted.
Painters love water.
So,
yeah, I move that the appeal be denied.
Now, what about this? In all fairness to them, what about the sewer issue? Have we always?
You've left that discretion to your general manager, and we are going to bring back a policy, Art and I. In fact, we're proposing that for next month, and I have those other ones in a little stack waiting on, depending on what the final policy is. But typically they've been when you thought they were, like what Director Sanders was mentioning, there was some reason why that you had adjusted.
When the water is pouring out into the street or et cetera, but if it's just being consumed in some fashion, I think we have to assume.
June 13th, we held the community workshop on the proposed long-term financial management plan for the CCSD, within which water and wastewater rates will be developed. I did want to mention for the public's information that the consultant's PowerPoint presentation is available for review on the CCSD website at www.cambriacsd.org. We're recommending a special meeting for a hearing to consider any proposed adjustments to the CCSD water and sewer rates from Monday, August 6th, and either at 12:30 p.m. or 6:30 p.m. here at the Vets Hall. I have to work around an evening engagement for the Follies for the 6:30 time. And I think that we have a good enough relationship with their practice team and their Pine Dorado chairman that we would hopefully be able to do that. Obviously, the CCSD governing business has priority for the Vets Hall use, and I don't normally like to do that, but I think that we can do that for the 6:30 time if that's your preference.
I can't do 12:30.
Okay. So.
That's a different issue, but we had it in the evening before, and five non-staff people showed up. And I have the microphone open. I hope that we do something to encourage people to attend. And would we go through the process again?
Each and every customer will get a notice, because we have to comply with Prop 218. So every customer will get a notice that suggests what the proposed rates or adjustments will be. Mm-hmm. So that's the notice that they're going to get the hearing, based on what time I get out of you all today.
So you only can make the 6:30
meeting? Right. I can't be here at 12:30. I'm going to be either in Santa Maria or San Luis Obispo that time. Mm-hmm.
Could it be any earlier than 6:30, 5? Or?
I can't. Yeah, I mean, 6:30 is really the earliest. 6 would be cutting it close. I can't promise I can be here. I'd prefer 6:30.
What the folly starts at 8?
Their practice starts at 5.
Oh, it's just practice.
It's just it's practice. Practice. It's their practice. Yes.
Thanks.
They're gonna go to Greg's house. He doesn't mind.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I'll move the recommended action with the proviso that the special meeting be set for Monday, August the 6th at 6:30 p.m.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please state aye.
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 Hearing none opposed, the motion carries unanimously. 8A, Art or Tammy?
First, we're going to go back to the Information Commission. This is their election for the special district member, and that seat expired in December 2006 and was held by Barbara Mann. And she is one of the two folks who were nominated, Barbara Mann and William Miller. I'm trying to look to see if we know where William Miller is from.
Garden Farms.
Okay, Garden Farms. Okay, and Barbara Mann is from Oceano CSD, and they've been nominated. Their new term would expire December 2010. And the nomination period had expired, but we have to get this ballot in by July 2nd. And I have had a couple of emails from Paul Hood of LAFCO saying, where's your vote, where's your vote? So staff's recommending that you cast a vote or the ballot for Barbara Mann, who is the incumbent.
Okay, this is a very serious item, and I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second. Second.
All those in favor, please state aye.
Aye. Aye.
Hearing none opposed, the motion carries unanimously. Okay, this will be my third attempt at item 8A. Will I succeed this time?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
I'll let District Council deliver the staff report.
As you know, we have been working to work out any differences we've had with the county and the Coastal Commission staff regarding the more recent local coastal plan update. It was continued to the July meeting and from, I believe, the April meeting. And during that time, we've met with the respective staffs and either understand or worked out some of the differences that we have. We've narrowed it down to 4 areas. And what you have in your packet today, other than the resolution that we're requesting that you adopt, is the material that we put together to be given to the coastal commissioners by our lobbyists. Those 4 issues regard affordable housing, in-stream flow studies of the creeks in Cambria, supplemental water project desal standards, and uses on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. We tried to put this in a format that would be easy to read, not only for us, but for the coastal commissioners that are looking at a whole lot of things at one time. And we did have some other comments and concerns, but they were mostly language types of things which we believe will be incorporated or amended in some manner in the staff report from the Coastal Commission, which we have yet to receive. But the first issue, affordable housing, just eliminates a sentence out of the proposal by the Coastal Commission staff, and that would allow us to work with the county in the future to develop a program, and plus would enable us to use all types of water, not just multiple family water for affordable housing. As you know, we have projects that use single-family allocations, and we have projects that may use commercial allocations. Somewhere along the lines of Director Coben's report, Smart Growth, we would use commercial water to develop units for affordable housing above the Cinephone meeting we had with them that they were not going to change, would be an in-stream flow study for any major water supply project the district seeks to commence. As you see in the pictures in the report, what we did is we produced an aerial photo that shows not only the creeks but all the properties along the creeks. And the study that they want us to conduct for these projects would look at how these streams are necessary and the flows are necessary to support sensitive species and the habitats and the aquifers and how they impact agricultural resources. We believe, as set forth in this brochure, that this report is largely useless for many of the projects that we propose or could propose, such as well repair, recycled water facilities, storage tanks, and things of that nature. It is largely impractical to do because we'd have to have access to properties. We'd have to guess what the agricultural uses are, what the crops would be in any particular year. So it's not the type of study that would be helpful in any regard. What we would have to do for any project that impacted the creek would be an environmental review that would look at all these various things for the particular project that we propose. So it's not as if we're trying to get out of the analysis that they want us to do, because it would be project specific. But this amendment would allow us to continue on a project by project basis and not have to worry about a project that would be impossible to do, very costly, and frankly useless at the end of the day for the efforts that they're trying to accomplish, and that's protecting the creek. The next item, it deals with the desalinization standards and the supplemental water project standards. It is, as been reported, our current project to sink two submerged test wells in the San Simeon Beach area has been delayed because of an interpretation of an existing local coastal plan section that basically has been interpreted to indicate that we can't put anything underground, above ground, for our facility in the state park area, which is a recreational zoned area. We're trying to fix standards in the rural area and some standards in the urban area. So we're making some minor suggestions in this regard. The last is uses on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. As we've talked about at the board level many times, there's a proposed cell tower site, and we just found out again that we placed it incorrectly on the map that you see in your staff report. It's actually up about an inch closer to the highway. That, in the draft that we received from the Coastal Commission staff, that one of the permitted uses that we proposed was deleted, and that's communication facilities, which would eliminate this site or any site on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. As you know, this site lease has been in effect for many years, and the proceeds of this go to the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. That is a large part of their funding month to month, and this would eliminate that. And also, as you know, and anyone who has cell service in Cambria knows, the cell service is not very good. In fact, it can be a danger in some situations to people who come into our community and try to use their cell phones in emergency and they don't work. So we have, the coastal staff has been adamant on this provision, so all we are asking for is this one site be approved somehow in the amendment and that this be allowed to go forward to fund this operation. The site, as you can see, is within the trees. I think Tammy walked out there this week, and the proposed towers would look like trees and would be not, they are not visible from the road, not visible from the trail, and even if you got up close, you wouldn't be able to distinguish easily that these are the cell towers. So we don't think it's an intrusion into this particular open space area. In fact, it's part of the management plan and the EIR that we are currently processing. It's been conceived of even before I started working here in 2000. I was handed a lease saying this is the lease for that site, and that's when we originally worked on it and enacted the lease. I don't know if you have anything.
Yeah, ranch manager Ben Bortic is out there, and actually, by the way, I did get ticks, but Director Sanders went with us, and our coastal advocate, Dave Dish, and his partner and son, David, went out there with us, and thank goodness Ben was with us. He had to flag it. We had to find it. It's in a rather obscure area on the ranch, and it is off an old trail that is not utilized much, a very tiny trail. I don't even make it sound like it's a big foot trail. And then it is among trees that are 50 to 70. You can't see homes. You can't see the Huntington Trail. You can't see the Ridge Trail. You can barely see Highway 1 as thick as those trees are in there. So it just doesn't seem to be fair or manageable that you would just make a blanket statement that you're not going to approve a cell site on this property, because it makes it sound like that they're sticking out in the middle of the West Ranch, and that is simply not the facts, and it's not true.
We've had all the archaeological work and done.
It sounds like they've gotten through that process already, through the planning process.
There hasn't been any objection through the whole permitting.
Not as of now. And now that there's a new carrier, they're just picking up where the last one left off.
Well, what concerns me, have you finished, Art? I didn't want to.
The only other item on the ranch is dealing with water wells. They eliminated our ability to put a water well on the site, which we were considering doing, to use water that currently doesn't go into our potable water supply to address needs at on the community park, and also would allow us another option in the future if it became necessary. But the current proposal would eliminate the ability to drill any well on the ranch.
So I'll just ask the question, Elon. So of these four items, are they're all those that the staff has not been willing to support?
Well, the affordable housing one, they weren't adamant about not supporting it, but since it was still important to us, we wanted to ensure that it was presented to the Coastal Commissioners, too. They may well, in their staff report, already delete this sentence.
What in the world would they complain about the in-stream? That just seems a no-brainer. The way the others, I could see where they might...
She just answered the question.
It's counterintuitive. If you're going to do a desalination plant,
right,
you're going to increase the water supply without affecting the stream.
Yeah,
so
right,
why would you do a stream flow study? It just doesn't make any sense.
What is their argument?
They have been adamant about an in-stream flow study for years on the creeks. And as you can see by the map, the logistics and the practicality of doing it makes it completely impossible.
The bottom line is the Coastal Commission staff wants to manage the CCSD's water supply.
And just one other comment that I did work with Art on the staff report is that we took, because we were the ones that went to the county and asked that it be continued from the February, I believe, agenda to this June one when it was going to be in San Luis Obispo. We have worked in these months with the SLO County Planning staff and the Coastal Commission staff, and John Ufrat of SLO County Planning County.
What are the chances that you'll be able to convince the commissioners?
We're looking at it being a very good chance. We're going to have meetings set up with them, with Dave Nish, and we'll be meeting with them in the next couple of weeks. Most of them will be during that week of the meeting before the hearing on the 11th.
I have a concern with number four. The uses in the Fiscalina Ranch Preserve. And this is kind of like the... defensible space ordinance and the lighting issue. This three words, one caretaker residence. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean a shed? Does that mean a McMansion, as one speaker said? Does that mean a house? Is that consistent with the our obligations to keep that portion of the ranch open space forever? What's up with that?
This was a provision. I wasn't involved with all of it, but it was in the local coastal plan update as approved by the Board of Supervisors, had the support of county planning staff at the time also. And I think was envisioned that if ever in the future the use of the ranch required 24-hour residence there for monitoring purposes, that it could be allowed. It
would never.
It'd have to go through the whole permitting
process.
Never.
I mean, I can understand the county saying that because they don't live here and they don't.
That's right.
They don't have, you know. I mean, I don't see Rick Hawley. I don't see any. I don't see Joanne.
We commented on it, and I have to admit, because Art wasn't at that meeting, I was at that meeting, and I said, you know, that's never going to happen. But it is an allowable use. They have this very intricate system and schedule, Slo County does, about what are allowable uses in open space areas, and that is an allowable use for that property. I argued the fact that it wasn't contained within the East West Ranch Management Plan and other documents. So they're having it in there because of that. We don't have any heartache. Staff doesn't if it's not in there.
Yeah, but why do we have to put that language? The red is our language, isn't it? Or am I wrong?
That's correct.
That's correct.
So why do we? I cannot, you know, in good conscience, agree to those three words. I mean, how can, given our history and you know the our covenant.
Staff, Slo County staff's the reason why they want it in there is that
comments that we're going to support. How can we support the potential building of a structure? I can't look at my constituents and say, you know, I've just recommended to my staff to notify the county staff to build to authorize building in the future because under their guidelines we're allowed to build buildings. How can anyone on this board agree to anything like that?
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I think all this is, it's allowed. It's not saying we want it.
No,
before it happens, it's allowed.
If the board votes today for us to take this out, we'll do that. That's not a problem. This is just our recommendation and our position, basically, with the commission, what we want in the, as far as amendments to the plan.
And I noticed, I also, this was not as offensive to me as somewhere, when I saw the cell thing, and I don't know whether it was a staff report or maybe it came in the mail, I just don't recall, but I saw six structures.
No, that was an email that someone sent us within the community, and that's why I'm trying to verify that. I don't have the final plans on what those were. And these are low-lying buildings that hold the technology for the cell antennas or the discs that are going to go
well,
on
fine,
the trees.
Well, fine, but it says caretaker. You know what that means to me? Caretaker means someone gets to live over there. That's what caretaker means to me.
And as I said, we can take it out today with a vote of the board. I mean, it wasn't one of our major points in this. It was something the county wanted, so we went along with it.
It doesn't say one small structure designed to hold the equipment and run the, you know.
No, that,
it says a caretaker residence.
Well, the caretaker residence, at least the way I looked at it, was something to care for the park. And I've worked for agencies which had 24-hour homes for people, for staff to live in areas just to maintain it, to keep people out of it in the middle of the night because it became necessary to hire someone and place something there. This wasn't intended for the communication towers.
Well, let me ask a question on this issue and then make a suggestion. What's the status of the Phillips House?
Our grant money doesn't allow that we got to purchase it doesn't allow us to use the facility. It's open space, so we can't use it.
And it's not in good condition. It's moldy.
So are we going to tear it down?
More than likely. We've got it boarded up right now, and it will more than likely be recommended for demo.
Take it out. I mean,
honestly, we have no problem with it.
Anyway.
It's a Slo County request. So.
Would the county have problems? Again, it's their
they'll argue that it's an allowable use.
Yeah.
And
the county isn't the county part of this east-west purchase, and didn't they insist upon the open space as much as the local citizens?
They were part of the community park area.
Maybe this is just an oversight that staff forgot because they don't live with the ranch like we do. But, I mean, in there, I think all the parties, the Conservancy, the CCSD, the County of San Luis Obispo, it was all intended to be open space forever. except for the east part of the ranch where the county, I recognize the county was interested in, you know, a recreation park, but that was for the east, but not for...
Well, that's where their financial contribution was targeted for that.
Right. Now that I understand, but not to build a house on the west.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I agree no one wants a house out there, but I don't know that it's worth having a discourse with the county to take it out. But
well, these are only our requests, so we can take it out of our request without a problem.
But if they say put it back, then are we in some kind of adversary?
They can request their own changes.
Yeah.
But would we, at the Coastal Commission, you're trying to defend something if the county is fighting against you, does that help us?
I don't think, based on our meetings with them in the past about these issues, that this is going to be a bone of contention between us.
Okay, if you think not, because I would say we would not look good to have the county come in and say, well, we don't support their change.
Well, given the history with the Coastal Commission, the county, and CCSD, the county has been with us pretty much historically, hasn't done us all that much good now, has it?
And we wind up fighting our own battles.
Yeah, not that I'm saying it's not a smart thing to have the county and us working together, but I would think that the Coast Commission might even appreciate the fact that we're trying to create as much open space as possible, frankly. You know, but anyway, that's... So I'm in favor of this, but I would like to delete that one caretaker residence.
I move the recommended action with the understanding that one caretaker residence will be deleted from the requested amendment on item number 4.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Hearing none against, the motion passes unanimously. We're now at the public comment stage, is that correct?